You are listening to the Peter Eichmann Show on KZUU 90.7 FM. Today we have Charles Mayer and Matt Chanel, as well as Ryan Gamble and Russell Liebert, and Connor Cook and Scott Dickinson coming into the studio at 7:30 to talk politics, to talk ASWSU elections. They, of course, are running for ASWSU president and vice president, and they are looking for your vote. They're going to be here to talk to you, to listen to you, to take your questions, and to talk to one another and talk to us. It's not going to be a forum like we had last week. It's going to be, or a debate like we had last week. It's going to be straight up a free, open talking session. We will be taking your calls at 335-2207. That's area code 509-335-2207. Our website is located at www.informationtechnologyprofessionals.com/PES, as in the Peter Eichmann Show. We also have a message board where you can go and leave messages or information, and that location is www.witsybanter.com, and then go into the link called Enter Banter, or you could get to them through our website, which once again is www.informationtechnologyprofessionals.com/PES. Just a little bit of background real quick. The song you're listening to here in the background is the theme of the Peter Eichmann Show. It's a song called Cool As You by a local group called Landis, formed several years ago in Landis House. My friend, who actually is in the band, made this instrumental-only version for us so we could use it as our show. And I'll go ahead and turn it up, and there's about another minute to go. I'll go ahead and turn it up, allow you to hear out the rest of the song, and then we'll get in with the rest of the show. We are going to talk a little bit about politics and a little bit about technology issues. There's a new virus out you will probably need to be aware of. I'm sure it'll start spamming your mailbox any day now.
From the people who brought you Fusion and Fusion 2, an even bigger and better party is on its way, so keep your dial tuned to 90.7 FM KZUU for more details to be revealed soon. And in...
Today is March 11th, 2002. 6 months ago this morning, the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, were attacked with human missiles. Missiles made out of airplanes full of human beings. Thousands of people died, hundreds of firefighters, hundreds of police officers in the duty of doing their job. One airplane was taken down in Philadelphia, Pittsburgh area, Pittsburgh, with brave men and women dying trying to stop that plane from hitting some other national landmark. It was a strange morning, I guess you could say. I woke up getting ready to sign up for softball up at the Cub or up at the rec center. And normally I didn't get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, 5:30 in the morning. But I did that day and turned on my radio to my radio station. They're in the news section, and the newscaster said that two airplanes crashed into the World Trade Center. I immediately thought that there's no way that could be an accident. There, something happened. So I turned on my television and saw the pictures that would, be displayed across the country for days on days, days on days, and days and days about the airplanes that had crashed so violently, killing so many people upon impact into the World Trade Center. And I was in shock. What can you say when, you realize that, two buildings in our country have been attacked by airplanes full of American citizens trying to go home or trying to go somewhere. And it was not done on accident. It was, it was done obviously on purpose. And what kind of response we had about it was pretty interesting. And it's been a great, trying time for Americans. And last night, the Peter Man and I had a opportunity to watch a TV show on CBS. And it showed footage that was being shot by two brothers who were cameramen doing a documentary on the life of a New York City firefighter going from a boy becoming a man.
Yeah.
And they showed, they happened to be shooting that day with the fire department when this happened. And they were able to go to Ground Zero, and they were there before the towers had collapsed. They were inside the lobby of the buildings. They themselves were in the same peril as all the firefighters and all the other people. They themselves really believed they were going to die. And it was a very somber but realistic look into what was going on. The fire department that they were with, the actual station, was lucky in the fact that they didn't lose any of their members in that in the attack or in the subsequent collapse of the Trade Center. They all made it out, and I don't know. I guess I'm very happy for that.
Yeah.
I would have.
Yeah,
I mean,
definitely.
It was. I didn't realize there was a point in the show where one of their firefighters had been missing. Everybody had been accounted for except for one. And it was about 9 hours after the whole entire thing had started. He came walking in, and of course, everybody else at the station was very relieved to know that he actually did live, and nothing bad happened to him.
Yeah, he was actually the one that they were supposed to be doing the documentary on.
Yeah, they had lost track of him in the whole chaos, and I can understand that. But what was interesting is just, the whole entire, just the scene. I mean, it was amazing footage that they showed on CBS.
Oh, yeah.
What was really great about it was, the Nextel supplied, lack of commercials, and, essentially they would go to a couple breaks where they would show pictures of firefighters from different stations and whatnot. And it was a great time to watch the show. And, like I said, no commercial interruptions. I mean, I guess it would have been sort of hard to go from that kind of material to a commercial for McDonald's or something like
definitely.
That. So anyway, it was a great show to watch. I was really happy to get a chance to see it. It sort of gave you a much different view than the footage that you normally see from miles and miles and miles away. I mean, you were right there. You were you were there when the stuff was falling around you. You followed one of the guys as he had to crawl underneath a truck, and you could just see everything go from normal blue skies and the cameras on the ground, you can see pebbles, and pretty soon, really, I mean,
big chunks
about the size of golf balls started raining down.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, dust cloud came and made it to where you could not even see anything other than the dust. And it was just, I mean, for that person to be in that situation, I mean, you had to have thought you were going to die. And I mean, I don't know how most people would have dealt with something like that. And it was, what was also nice about it was the cameramen had said that they were not going to shoot or show graphic footage. When they actually did the camera, shooting the camera, the people, they weren't shooting the dead people. They weren't, you know, focusing in on, you know, body parts here and there.
Yeah.
They were focusing in on the firefighters, the people who were living. And what was really interesting is the raw language that was caught on tape, on the audio track. And
allowed to go on to CBS.
Allowed to go on the air. Yeah, I'm sure they pulled some strings somewhere along the way. But, I mean, I think it really added to the whole situation rather than having, you know, certain things bleeped out. I mean, you heard, you know, raw emotion. You heard people talking in a situation where the stress level had to have been more than any of us have dealt with before. What was really cool was the just the whole entire aspect of, you know, I mean, it was like they put you in a situation where you could feel that you were one of the firefighters and you were one of the you were there in the building. You know, you're hoping for the best, and then when you get back to the station house and you find that one guy, that one firefighter's missing, you know, you're sitting there hoping, you know, that, you know, he wasn't one of the people. It was almost like a TV show where you're like, you know, even if it was him, you're thinking to yourself, well, you know, it's only TV, but then you got to realize, no, this is, you know, real life. This is, you know, really happening, and, you know, you didn't know if he was going to be dead or alive, and, you know, of course, luckily he came walking back to the station hours later, well alive. I think one of the most—I don't know if it was graphic. I guess I would say the most, one of the most graphic pieces of footage they had was of the official first death of the World Trade Center was the priest, and he was being carried on the chair, you know, slumped over dead. By four or five firefighters to a church and put upon the altar. And you know, they mentioned in the show that he had the death certificate number of 00001. He was the first official death of the World Trade Center, and that's actually a picture I have. I bought a couple books, magazines of you know, pictures of this, and that was one of the pictures in it. Is this priest being carried away, you know, slumped over, looking almost like he was sleeping, but, you know, definitely dead. So the whole entire show was, you know, offered you a very realistic, very, you know, inside look at this whole thing. And, you know, and you sat there, and what was interesting about it is, you didn't dwell for a long time on the people who did it. You know, you didn't sit there and spend the whole time. I mean, that was the, I guess, the thing that was interesting is the firefighters at the time, you know, they weren't dwelling on, oh my goodness, we've just been, you know, attacked by some terrorists. Let's go out there and get them. They were focusing on, you know, the now, the people.
Mm-hmm. Just the job at hand.
The job at hand. And I'm sure that probably helped them get through it all. But, you know, as I sat there and watched it, I was sort of the same way. I wasn't thinking about the war on terrorism that has happened, nothing like that up until at the time where they played George Bush's first speech.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started reliving those parts. And I remembered listening to his first speech that night, right around 6 o'clock. And I remember my disappointment in the first speech, how
noncommittal,
yes. Very standoffish, very, mm-hmm. you know, like, you know, it didn't feel like, you know, a strong statement was being made.
No.
It wasn't until a day or two later that he made a statement that, you know, people started, you know, that I started respecting. And of course, at the at Ground Zero that one day with all the firefighters when he was talking, and one of them was in the
bullhorn, and
I can't hear you. And George Bush is like, well, I can hear you. And pretty soon the people who did this will hear from all of us.
Yeah.
That was pretty good.
That was very cool.
Yes.
It was a really good show. It was definitely worth seeing. If you saw it last night, one thing that I really liked about the show was, you know, our empathy went out to all these people and our sorrow for what happened. But after getting the firsthand video, it really allowed you to identify with everybody a little more. I mean, obviously, we didn't experience it, and hopefully we'll never have to experience something like that to know exactly what they're going through. But it really helps you get a firsthand view of what went on.
Well, you remember that one firefighter talking about, body parts raining down,
yeah.
People jumping, and you always had to be cautious looking up for big chunks of the building and people.
And people, yeah.
Falling all around you, and it's just like, that would be just sort of, how can you avoid that? You're looking up and you see another guy jump or something
yeah.
like that. It's not a very good situation.
It's just the thoughts that must have been going through everybody's head is just
right.
Incredible.
The one firefighter on the hill, the top of the hotel that was nearby said, the roof was full of feet and legs.
Pieces of people. Yep. Just, how do you go through or try to imagine something like that to think what he's going through? Just thinking of seeing legs and feet and fingers all over the top of a building. It's very traumatic, and hope I never have to be able to identify with him, It's not something I really want to go through.
That would be the only time I'd ever want to be able to identify with something like that is when I'm over in Afghanistan. Exactly. Taking care of those terrorists.
Checking out one of the caves.
Or all of them.
Yeah.
Did you see the thing about the articles about the nuclear weapons need to be ready?
No, I haven't seen that.
Yeah. After the show today, check out the news sources.
Okay.
Talks about, yeah. I haven't had a chance to read the whole article. I said after the show, not right now.
I'd rather look it up right now.
Well, we could do it after the show. Also, Rhino's
I'll
in
do
the
it
studio.
On a break.
Okay, that'd be
yes.
a good idea. Rhino's in the studio sitting behind the Peter Man. We're going to have a sports segment today, finally.
I know, that's great.
It's been a while. We could blame it on Ryan if we wanted, because he did oversleep a couple nights. But then again, he's had a lot on his mind.
No excuses. He's our sports guy.
Yeah, that's true. He needs to put everything else beside him and get up here and do sports.
We can start early.
Yeah, well, we could probably do a little bit more sports than normal, but I think why don't we go through a couple tech articles?
Yeah. Well, one of the big tech articles is this new virus that's out, or it's a worm. It's called the MyLife worm. And according to ZDNet, this worm consists of an old-fashioned photograph of a girl holding a flower, and it's making its round across the Internet. MyLife, which is W32 at MyLife at MM, is a 30,720-byte worm written in Visual Basic. And if executed, the worm will attempt to mail copies of itself to everyone in the user's address book and will attempt to delete critical Windows files. Fortunately, a bug in the current worm code prevents MyLife from deleting any files. So it's not all that dangerous right now. Of course, if the author of this fixes the bug, then it could become very deadly. It arrives as an email with a subject that reads, MyLife, oh. The body of the email message contains the following text. Hi, how are you? Look to the digital picture. It's my love. Very, very funny. MyLife equal my car. My car equal my house. It has an attached file called mylife.scr. And when you click on that, it sends a copy of itself to everyone in your address book. And if the bug wasn't there, it would delete critical Windows files, which would crash your computer.
It's almost like the Arkansas bug.
Yeah.
Have you heard of that one?
No.
It comes
no.
via email as well.
Mm-mm.
Yes? No?
I haven't.
Well, when you get this, I think it's called the Arkansas virus. And you get this email, and it says you've been hit with the Arkansas virus. You now must delete all your Windows files
oh, yeah.
and send this to everybody in your address book. A very low-tech virus.
Yeah. on the honor system.
Very much so.
Yes.
Going with that, we also have a article about the British. Once again, the British.
Not the British.
The British are at it again. If you remember a couple weeks ago, we talked about British Telecom presenting its court case claiming that it holds patent technology patent to the hyperlink technology and is demanding a licensing fee, which would then make it every time you use the internet, you or your internet service provider is paying some sort of fee for you to click from one link to another.
Yeah, that seemed a little weird. But didn't we find out last week or 2 weeks ago that some guy at Stanford had done it before the British?
Well, it was at this, in the same article they were talking about that and how the hyperlinks were being used years before British Telecom claimed they had them. And I don't know.
Yeah.
I think the British are just trying to take
Well, they want to be known
credit.
For something. So,
yeah.
I mean, why not steal hyperlinks?
Yeah. I mean, the last time they were really in the news was, what, the 1500s when they had a really good navy or something like that?
Yeah.
Anyway, WWF could lose WWF.com. The World Wildlife Fund, WWF, has put the clinch once again on the World Wrestling Federation in a tussle over the acronym WWF, marking the latest legal setback for the entertainment group's marketing effort. The UK Court of Appeal on Wednesday upheld a lower court's ruling that found the federation had breached an 1894 agreement with the World Wildlife Fund that bars the wrestling group from using the WWF acronym. The decision, among other things, puts the group's WWF.com domain in doubt. The International Conservation Group said it registered WWF in 1961 when it was founded. Now the organization, which aims to protect the world's wildlife and wildlands, expects the wrestling group to refrain from using WWF as a domain name and for selling merchandise with the acronym, which is interesting because you see WWF all the time, and they always use the WWF logo.
Oh,
so.
Yeah. Well, that could be big if they lose that. That's incredible.
But I mean, once again,
everything is WWF, like you said.
Yeah, but the British are at it again. They're always scheming them.
Yeah, like we really care about the British. I mean, why is this even an article? I mean, does anybody take this seriously?
Obviously, it's an article. I got it from ZDNet.com.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I guess somebody takes it seriously. Somebody respects the British more than I do, but I mean, who cares if they claimed WWF first?
Well, first off, they're in British, we're in America,
yeah.
So screw them.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I don't care if they claimed it over there in Britain.
They
don't claim a worldwide claim on it, especially in 1961, well before this one world government stuff that the UN is pushing upon all of us.
Oh, yeah. I mean, with that, America definitely has the foothold. And WWF, okay, we just won't ship our products to Britain. I mean, they can't be that big of a market anyways. And if they are, we don't want them.
Yeah, we don't want them anyhow.
No, we don't.
We hate the British. Okay, we have the time now is 6:30.
6:30.
We're going to go to a break in a minute, and when we come back, we'll have Rhino with sports. I'm sure we're going to talk about the upcoming Mariner season and a couple other important sports tidbits. One last article, though, and it's technology-related, but it's also sports-related. Baseball's back grabbing the hits. Traffic to MLB.com, the official website of Major League Baseball, jumped 71% during the week ending February 24th, according to the Internet Audience Measurement Service, Nielsen Net Ratings. Net Ratings said that 751,000 people logged on at work, accessed the site, compared with 439,000 visitors from the previous week. More than 15% of the site's audience viewed the team rosters for the New York Yankees. Ew. And 9% access pages containing ticket information for their favorite teams.
9% for the New York Yankees?
No. 15%. Why don't you listen instead of reading
15%.
The...
15%.
Yeah.
9% about the tickets and stuff. Well, I was trying to make it sound better than it was. 15% for the New York Yankees. What a waste.
The Yankees are a waste. Islander Rhythms Dinner Show presents guest speaker Hunara K. Trask, a well-known author, professor, and poet and activist, April 5th at 6:30 p.m. at Lincoln Middle School. Come and enjoy a night of traditional and modern island food and dances by the WSU Pacific Islander Club. Also win fun and cool door prizes. Rhino is in the studio with us, And once again, we are going to talk sports.
Good morning.
Good morning. So what do you have to tell us?
Well, what sport would you like to talk about first?
Whatever sport you'd like to talk about first.
We can talk about men's baseball at WSU.
Sure.
They've been doing pretty good.
Have they?
Yeah.
Have you been going to their games?
I haven't been in any other games. Been kind of busy with
something
lately.
Else.
Yeah, something else. I won't talk about that in the air right now.
No.
But they were 9-4 the last time I checked. The best record I've seen WSU baseball team have.
That's not too bad.
Yeah, it's really good.
They're losing a couple of the games, though, that you'd think they should win.
Yeah. They had a couple of problems with pitching early on, but they seem to have ironed out the kinks. They were looking for a number three starter because in college we only go with a three-man rotation rather than like a five-man rotation in pros.
Right. We did have a four-game winning streak. Then we went down to Sacramento and actually lost 9-2 to them.
Ouch. What are we standing at a record now?
I don't know.
Not the answer I was looking for.
Well, I figured you knew that kind of stuff. You're the sports dude.
I'm one weekend behind now.
Why are you so far behind?
Yeah, I was doing other stuff. Let's just say I was doing homework over the weekend. How's that?
Well, you're doing some sort of work at least.
I was focusing 100% on my classwork all weekend long.
Well, that's good. That's sort of a joke, I think, from last week, right?
I guess that you could call that a plug or something.
Yeah, okay. Senior second baseman Bookie Gates was in that game was the bright spot for the Cougs. He is leading the team mm-hmm. with a .414 batting average, and went 2-for-4 with one ribby at the end of the game.
Wow!
Yeah, .414 in college is pretty darn good.
Very good.
Very good. That's what, like Olerud type of numbers?
Olerud was much better than that.
Oh, come on. Nobody could be better than that.
Yeah, of course Olerud could. I mean, he's like the best WSU baseball player we've ever had.
What about Seeley?
Olerud's better.
You think so? Why is that?
I know so. You can't really... offense is always better than good pitching.
What?
Good offense is always better than good pitching.
You are smoking crack.
Give me a good pitcher that a good hitter wouldn't hit off of.
Randy Johnson.
Now, Randy Johnson is an excellent pitcher. Randy Johnson is not just a good pitcher.
Oh, that's a nice decision.
Okay. Well, here's the whole thing, I guess. It wasn't until the Mariners got good pitching, good quality pitching, that we actually did things. I mean, for years we had teams that, you know, hit the most home runs in the whole entire, whole entire league, and we still weren't winning the games that we ought to have.
I think the Mariners are a little bit above good, though, right now. They're up in that best bullpen ever type range.
They were, at least.
I think they still are. I think with that addition to Hasegawa that they're much better now.
You think Baldwin's going to do anything?
I don't think it's going to matter. As long as he can go five strong innings, we have a deeper bullpen this year that can bail him out of jams.
You think so?
I know so.
What about the loss of Norm?
The loss of Norm.
I'm sorry. I'll give Ryan a chance to stop laughing so he can answer that question.
That's like losing me.
I would never like to lose you. That would be sad.
I mean, pitching for the Mariners. I mean, I could probably do as good as Norm was doing.
Oh, come on. Whatever.
You're right. I'd do better.
Norm, the sheriff. He came in and, like, shut people down way back in 95.
Oh, the only reason Norm is still around is because he did that and because he's a real good friends with Lou Piniella.
Oh, yeah. So Lou's going to waste a roster spot on some guy who's not performing.
Dan Wilson's a good example.
What? That is not a waste of a roster spot. Dan,
he's a man that does not perform.
How do you figure? He's performed to the same level, I'm sure, for his whole career.
Exactly.
But the thing is, for a catcher, he's not the best offensive catcher, but he's not the worst one we've ever had. He's a great defensive catcher, and I thought you were saying something about offense being like really good and defense being better.
Well, if you have great defense, you can back up your pitching, and great defense does help sometimes. Cleveland had a really great defense for a couple of years there with Omar and Alomar up the middle, so they were able to win because of it.
You mean our Omar Vizquel that they stole?
Yeah, our Omar, which we sold off.
Well, that's only because we couldn't afford the fact that he was going to want a lot of money.
Couldn't afford or didn't want to choose to afford.
See, I think that's probably more what it's like. You know, I mean, when you got Alex Rodriguez in the wings, you know, why would you pay somebody millions of dollars when you could get this green behind the ear rookie who's supposed to be really good, you know, a lot less money.
Yeah, but I would have kept Vizquel that extra year we didn't really get anything out of the trade, trading it for Felix Fermin.
Elgato. Oh, come on.
Hey, Little O for one more year would have been worth it. We could have lost him to free agency, but that would have been okay to me.
Yeah, I suppose the choice between Felix for a year or a couple years or Elgato, I think I probably would have gone with the cat or with Little O.
I would have gone with anything but Felix Fermin. And when we threw in $1 million for them to take Omar from us, it kind of threw out the window that we weren't willing to pay money for Omar.
Well, did we really throw that kind of money, or was Felix really worth it? Because he was a Elgato.
Felix is not worth it. He had a career year before he even got to Seattle, but he totally became the best bench warmer on the team. The thing I'm worried about this year, though, is our left field position. I really don't think that Ruben Sierra's
going to... Maybe Bone will come back.
You could always hope for that, but I don't think Ruben Sierra is going to last too long. He's one of those players that year in and year out, he tends to get injured, and you can't really focus your whole season on hoping that he's going to play there. Hopefully the Mariners have something in the works where they can trade some of this pitching they have down in the minor leagues for a good left fielder.
What about, I think Cincinnati has somebody.
Cincinnati does have somebody, Dimitri Young, but they already traded him.
Ryan knows that's not what I'm talking about.
We're talking about Griffey, of course. Griffey has said that he wants out of Cincinnati. It could be because too many of his teammates are saying that he's a lazy bum who takes too much attention away from other players on the team. And from lots of reports out of Seattle when Griffey used to be here, that could be true. One of the things we could use Griffey for, though, is somebody to bat right behind Ichiro. I mean, a left-handed power hitter batting behind somebody with that good of speed leading off for the Mariners could be really good. But the problem with bringing Griffey back is we'd probably have to give up a lot to get him, and we'd have to make him play left field. I don't think we would want to give up Mike Cameron in center field. He's earned that spot, so he should be able to keep that spot. What do you think about Mike Cameron?
Mike Cammy. My God. You know, the guy comes in trying to fill the shoes, the large shoes left by Ken Griffey Jr., adored by thousands upon thousands upon thousands of Seattle fans, as evidenced by every time the announcer at the beginning of the game would announce his starting lineup, he would be like, Ken Griffey Jr., and the whole fans just went nuts. You know, I mean, it's like no other person on the team got that kind of ovation as Griffey. I mean, except A-Rod, I think, got really close to it. A-Rod was sort of the...
Sometimes.
You know, well, I think what it was there is that you had about 5,000 young girls all screaming in unison, oh, my God, it's A-Rod!
Yeah, they just like to see him in his tight white uniform.
Anyway, so Griffey was definitely a fan favorite by far, and has always had been. And then you got some guy that nobody's ever heard of who doesn't hit the home runs or make the spectacular plays like Griffey ever does. And he comes in trying to fill the shoes. And I think the fans realize the situation. They realize that Griffey more or less said, hey, I'm out of here. You guys, you know, get rid of me. I don't want to be here anymore. The fans realized Griffey didn't want to be here anymore. And that Cameron did not ask to be put in that situation. He was sort of thrown into it, and he made the best of it. He actually, I think a lot of the Griffey fans were won over by Cameron early on, and I think that I would believe, and I would love to maybe see a poll like this, if the fans were to be able to choose now, if Griffey were to say, you know, I want to come back and play with the Mariners, and the team were to say, yes, you can come back, would the fans want to see Griffey come back and take center field over and be just like in the olden days? Or would they say, you know, Griff, you can come back, but center field's no longer yours?
Oh, no way. On the first one, of course, I would start a poll to keep Cameron in center field and not let Griffey even think about taking that position back.
Yeah, that's not his anymore. He got rid of it fair and square. He said, I don't want to be here anymore. Cameron came in and early on in his first season, went back and made that Griffey-like robbing of a home run catch, which I think sold the fans that this Mike Cameron guy is a good player.
Yeah.
And with a little bit more work on his bat, there's an article talking about his bat. They said that, you know, they're going to work really hard on his strikeouts. He strikes out relatively often. And if they can, they said if they could lower his number of strikeouts by about 50 this year, that they believe that he'll be a 300 hitter, because That would be 50 additional chances to get a hit, which would give him that 300 batting average.
Yeah, I remember last year he set the record for most consecutive games striking out. I think it was 22 consecutive games that he had.
You don't have to bring that up.
Got to bring that up because the guy's not going to break that record ever again. He looks like he could come out with a really great season this year. But talking about when he came over, I don't remember exactly what I felt when Cameron was traded for Griffey. I probably was along the same lines of thinking Cameron was just one of those so-so players that was going to take Griffey's spot and not last very long. But he's become an all-star, and I really started to like him a lot. He's one of those players that didn't quite become the superstar when he came here. We had A-Rod, and he didn't quite take that superstar approach either. As soon as A-Rod was gone, we had Edgar step up and Boone step up. Cameron has been just one of those great team players that you like to see. But back to the Griffey aspect of things, recently the Mariners approached Jay Buhner about retiring his number 19, and he had something really strange to say. In fact, he said that he would not let his number be the first Mariner number ever retired. He wanted to see Griffey's retired before his. It brings to mind Alvin Davis and his number 21.
AD, yeah, I don't understand. I mean, if anybody's number should have been retired, it should have been AD, Mr. Mariner.
I agree.
Or Harold Reynolds, but more so Mr. Mariner. I mean, Alvin Davis, first Mariner ever to hit 1,000 home runs. He was the AL Rookie of the Year in 1994.
84.
That's what I said.
Okay.
Didn't I?
I thought you said 94.
I'm pretty sure I said 1984.
Okay.
Okay. Anyway, you know, he was definitely a fan favorite, and unfortunately went out on a relatively low note.
Yeah.
But Alvin Davis, you know, if anybody's number should have been retired or needs to be retired, we need to start with AD.
I'd agree with Harold Reynolds, too. I mean, every single year he was in Seattle, he won the league's, I think it was the Roberto Clemente Award for sportsmanship and giving back to the community. He won that every single year when he was on the Mariners.
Yes, Harold Reynolds is once, I mean, that's a player that I think, you know, a lot of fans don't think about when they think about past Mariners, it seems like, you know. They you know, it's like Mariner history stops in 94,
yep.
You know, or maybe 93, you know, it's like, you know, you have Randy and Griffey and all these other players that we've had that have all went away, and nobody ever really thinks back to the days of Harold Reynolds and Alvin Davis or anything. But then again, you got to realize the fan base is much different. Most of the fans became fans in 95.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I mean, everybody has to start sometime.
And those players are long gone by the time we got there.
So they never had an opportunity to see those great players.
All those fans remember is Joey Corr at second base. And who was our first baseman back then? Was that Paul Sorrento's year still?
After Alvin Davis, Pete O'Brien, P.O.B., took over. And I hated P.O.B. with a passion, only because he was taking it from Alvin Davis. I loved Alvin Davis. That was my guy.
Do you hate him as much as Ken Phelps?
Ken Phelps is a very bad man.
Why is he a bad man?
Because he broke up Brian Holman's perfect game bid in the bottom of the ninth inning in Oakland with a home run, turning a perfect game, one of like 15 in history, to a one hit, one run loss.
Well, you can't win them all.
Athletics. As a matter of fact, I was actually here in Pullman at the time, not as a student, of course, because I was too young for that. I was over here as mom's weekend, and we were listening to the game. So that was that's why I do not like Ken Phelps. But there is one thing I love about Ken Phelps. He was what got us Jay Buhner.
Gotta love that.
So he's had a little bit of a he's had an up and down career in my book. Huh?
So here's a question for you then.
What's
up? If you had to choose your favorite Mariner third baseman of all time, who would you choose?
Ooh, good
and
question.
Edgar doesn't count because he's the ultimate DH now. You can't go with Edgar.
But it's Edgar.
Edgar wasn't a superstar until he became a DH.
That doesn't mean. Are you saying that you could only be a superstar to be your favorite?
I'll let you choose him as your favorite third baseman if you can't come up with a better answer.
Let me think here. How about Jeff Cirillo?
Hey, well, if you're looking into the crystal ball and thinking he's going to come through in the World Series this year, okay.
He's my favorite, I said. I didn't say that he was the best.
Who do you think was the best? Other than Edgar.
No. Defensively, I mean, I guess you're right. I mean, Edgar wasn't like a superstar third baseman, never made it to an all-star game there, and sort of always seemed to get injured while he was there.
You a big Russ Davis fan?
No. By far, no.
Jim Presley?
I don't remember enough about Jim Presley on the field to know whether he was a great one or not. I mean, if he would have been one of my favorites. You know, he was... It was one of those things that that was back when I was old enough to go to the games, but not really old enough to care enough to, you know, watch these guys, you know, exclusively.
McLemore, Bell.
Bell actually was a good defensive third baseman. I mean, he made some pretty awesome plays. I mean, one that comes to mind was when he was practically on his back and threw the guy out at first.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
I mean, some of the plays like that, just, you know, jaw droppers. Of course, we're not going to have the opportunity to see that unless we play San Francisco. Or is it San Francisco you went to?
To who?
Bell. Bell went to San Francisco.
I think he went to Colorado, actually.
No, I don't think he did. He's down in San Francisco, I think.
Possibly.
Or maybe... Yeah, I guess we could look it up, but I'm pretty sure Bell's down there in one of those states.
All right.
I'm about positive about that.
He's in the National League West. We'll just narrow it down to that.
Okay. Here's a little bit of info about Dan Wilson. His batting average when he came to the Mariners in 94 was .216, but that was in 91 games. And pretty much every season he's played for the Mariners, he's played at least 90 games, and the most he ever has played or started is 138. So he's never been a full-season starter. But then again, as a catcher, it's a pretty tough thing to do. His batting average has gone like this. It's gone .216, .278, .285, .270, .250, .260, .235, .265, with a career batting average of .262. So it's not a spectacular batting average by any chance or by any stretch of the imagination, but it's a it's not a purely unrespectable batting average. His number of home runs, 76. So I suppose if you compared him with Bonds on home runs, that in his career he's done more home runs than Bonds did last year. So you can't complain about that.
Only by three. And you were right about David Bell. He has, they show him starting at third base for the San Francisco Giants this year.
Yeah, I was pretty sure about that. Because I think I think Bell is from Seattle, isn't he? Or from this area, but he is playing back, or being back down there is,
I can't,
or maybe he's
sure.
From down there.
I guess I thought he went to Colorado because there was a bunch of rumors about his dad being the manager there and that he would go play for him.
Why would you want to do that?
Maybe you can get more playing time that way.
Well, he got plenty of playing time as a Mariner. But, you know, I suppose by getting rid of Bell, if we get good quality out of Jeff Cirillo, which I have no doubt that we should, you know, we shouldn't miss Bell. And especially on the offensive side. You know, Mariners being one of the best offenses as well as best defenses last year. Could have been that much better by having some hitting in the place where we had people like David Bell, who did an okay job. David actually, his big thing was is that he always came through in the clutch, really. I mean, he was that kind of guy that you know, seemed like when we really, really, really needed to get a hit, he seemed to come through a lot for us.
So have you heard much about the Bonds and Sosa controversy going on?
Yeah, I read a little bit about it. I don't know. I think I'm sure the media was sort of hungry for something to write about baseball since preseason's here, and they wanted to say something about something.
Seems like Sammy Sosa's pretty mad at Barry Bonds, saying that he should try to break Barry Bonds' home run record. Sly way of saying he can't do it.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, 70-plus home runs is quite the feat when you went, almost 40 years without coming close, but without breaking it.
Yeah, Bonds had never had 50 before last year, and he hit 73.
Yeah, and how old is he now? 38-ish? 39?
Yeah,
40?
He's getting up there, but he re-signed like a four-year deal this year.
He's going to be well into his lower 40s before he's done with that deal.
Yeah, they figure that if he keeps up his pace, a career pace, he'll break it in 4 years, and he'll still be under contract for the Giants. Break the all-time home run record for Hank Aaron, that is.
Wow. That would be sort of interesting because that one's been around for a little while as well.
That's one of those chases I'd love to see on TV.
Yeah. Well, the thing that's sort of interesting about, I mean, sports, if you think about it, I mean, more and more it seems like players are playing well into their 30s.
Yeah.
You know, and it's one of those things where I think, you know, it's very evident by the fact that, you know, guys now, they, you know, when baseball season's over, they're not done. I mean, it's a year-round thing for them.
Yeah,
I mean,
and a lot of them play in summer leagues.
Right.
Winter leagues.
Yeah, down south. And so it's like when they're done with baseball here, they go and play baseball somewhere else. So they're always in shape. They're always doing things. It's not really like in the days when, you know, when baseball season was over with, you went to spring training to get back into shape to get ready to play ball. Most guys come to spring training ready to go.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just, you know, a time to get with your coaches and sharpen some of your skills or whatever else.
Except for a lot of those superstars who get the big contract and then take the summer off.
Yeah.
Winter. Jeez, I keep saying summer. I'm stuck on basketball right now. Sorry about that.
That's all right. Nobody is perfect, including you.
Speaking of basketball, how about them Sonics?
Well,
they're on a roll.
I think they are on a roll.
Finally got up into real playoff contention, seventh seed.
And I think that as soon as this song's over with, we'll get into Sonics.
All right.
You're listening to the Peter Eichmann Show on KZUU 90.7 FM. It is about 5 minutes after 7 on this rainy, gray morning here at Washington State University. And we have Rhino, the sports dude, in the studio with us. How you doing, Rhino man?
I'm not liking this weather one little bit.
No.
I had to walk up to the radio station this morning in the pouring rain.
That's not very good.
Not at all.
Also, we have the Peter man in the studio who's looking through some CDs. And we have a PSA. The ASWSU Housing Commission helps students find a place to live and can help answer your questions about renting in Pullman. Even if you are having a problem with your landlord, you can call the Housing Commission at 335-9574 or on the web at cub.wsu.edu/HC as in Housing Commission. The Peter Eichmann Show can be reached by telephone at 335-2207. That's area code 509-335-2207 if you want to speak with the Rhino Man or myself, or if you'd like to speak with the candidates when they come in about 20 minutes, 25 minutes. Also, our website is located www.informationtechnologyprofessionals.com/PES as in the Peter Eichmann Show. Our message board is located at www.witsybanter.com. Rhino and I are going to talk a little bit about basketball, followed by NFL football news. Hey, Rhino.
Yep.
Hey, how about Shaquille O'Neal last night?
What'd he do? Score a couple of points?
Yeah, about 40.
Oh, that's it?
Guess against who?
Must have had an off night.
Yeah, against the Knicks.
Was doing that great defense the Knicks are putting up this year.
Yeah. Who's your favorite basketball team again?
The Seattle Supersonics.
Oh, really? Your second favorite team?
Let's go with Sacramento Kings.
Yeah, right. Rhino is, like, one of the biggest Knicks fan I've ever seen. I can show you emails where his, like, signature was about 5K, and all it said was, like, New York Knicks, like, about 1,000 times.
I guess all I'm hoping for is that the Knicks do bad enough this year to get Jason Williams out of Duke as their number one pick in the lottery draft.
Why would we want that?
Well, I would love to have that because the Knicks have needed a point guard for years and years and years.
But wouldn't you want your favorite team to get that point guard?
My favorite team has a great point guard already, Gary Payton.
Oh, yeah, the guy you love so much.
Oh, I love him so much, yeah.
Gary Payton's like the only player I've ever heard you say you want to see die.
I never wanted to see a player die.
Oh,
I just
whatever.
Disliked him when he was talking trash too much to the officials and other teams and that kind of stuff because I thought he was holding back the team.
Yeah, sort of like some people say Griffey does.
Yeah.
More or less.
Seems that this year, though, Payton has calmed down a lot, and he's really been a team player and showed up in the last 13 games Sonics played.
Yeah. You think anything has to do with the fact of our coach?
Possibly.
What do you think about the coach?
I like him a lot. I mean, I loved him as a player. He was one of my favorite Sonics. We're talking about Nate McMillan, of course. He used to be out there with Dale Ellis, Xavier McDaniel, Benoit Benjamin.
The X-Man.
Derek McKee.
How about Jack Sikma? Was he there then?
No. Jack Sikma's an old man.
He's not old.
He was old when he came to the Sonics. Back in the days of Brown.
Brown. Downtown Brown.
He's out. Downtown Freddie Brown, of course, and Slick Watts.
Yeah. Wow. Why don't we have the cool names like that anymore?
Yeah. I don't know.
So, Peter, man, what's your favorite basketball team?
My favorite basketball team, pro, was the Chicago Bulls until Jordan retired. And then...
Oh, bandwagon fan, eh?
Yeah, pretty much. I was a Jordan fan. And then they split them up, split the whole team up, sent everybody out to different places.
So you're a Bullets fan now?
And, then they went on strike, and I haven't really watched an NBA game since that strike. I got into college ball.
An NBAA game? What's that?
A NBA game.
What's with the A over there?
I don't know. I think he's a Canadian, eh? Hey, you know about Canada, don't you? How they came up with the spelling of it?
How did they come about that? Say yes. just say yes.
C-A-N-A-D-A. You like?
Oh, God.
All right, let's talk Sonics.
All right, Sonics. They've won 11 out of their last 13 games. They're on a four-game winning streak.
Woo-hoo!
And doing that, they are now 9 games over .500 and sitting in the 7th seed strongly in the Western Conference. Their upcoming game is actually against Dallas, because if the playoffs started today, they would be playing the 2nd seed, which is Dallas. So this could be a playoff match that we could look forward to in the playoffs. Dallas is a pretty good team, too, though, so... We're looking at an uphill climb, but the Sonics have been playing really, really good lately. Gary Payton's been getting the ball around. Brent Berry's been doing great. Desmond Mason, Rashard Lewis. Although we lost Calvin Booth. He came down with a knee injury, and he's gone for the season now. He would have been one of those good players to get off the bench when we needed foul trouble, kind of like the three-headed monster back in the Chicago Bull days.
They had a three-headed monster?
Yeah, that's what they called their center. They used to throw three centers out at the same time. Well, not the same time, but the whole problem with them was that they didn't have a good center, so they had three guys who were sort of on the same level. I think that it was Luke Longley, Will Perdue, and Bill Wennington. And one of them would get in foul trouble, they'd put in the next one. He'd get in foul trouble, they'd put in the next one. Their job was pretty much just clog up the middle and not allow any easy layups on defense.
Very nice.
That's true. Then when they lost those guys, the second run, they came up with Dennis Rodman. He was pretty much the guy that got all the rebounds and all that kind of stuff.
If there's anybody in basketball not to like, it's Dennis Rodman.
Why is that? Best rebounder of all time?
I guess the thing is that sometimes your demeanor and your attitude.
Are you bringing his off-court life?
No. I wasn't even going to bring his off-court life. I'm talking about his on-court life. His demeanor and his attitude are not what sportsmanship is all about.
Are you not a big Rasheed Wallace fan?
No.
Kenyon Martin?
No. Well, let me tell you some of my favorite players in history.
Here we go.
Steve Largent. Edgar Martinez.
Okay, you're on the wrong sport.
Alvin
now.
Davis. No, I'm just talking about the kinds of people. If you notice, those aren't the kind of trash-talking, dirty-playing guys. They are the gentlemen of
wow,
the sport.
No mention of Dave Craig there, huh?
Okay, if you want me to continue, I'll continue.
Go Dave Craig,
Paul Scanzi, Jim Zorn. Well, actually, I lied about that one.
Jacob Green?
Jim Zorn was a good quarterback, but he definitely had an attitude that needed to go. What are you laughing at?
Nothing.
Yes, you are.
Well, he went as soon as Dave Craig came in there. The biggest mistake Seahawks ever made.
What's that?
Keeping Dave Craig for so long.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, Dave Craig, the best quarterback in Seahawk history, and arguably one of the top 10 quarterbacks in NFL history.
Top 10? I bet I could name 10 off the top of my head that are better than Dave Craig.
Yeah, right.
Let's start. John Elway.
He was okay.
Brett Favre.
No.
Steve Young.
Yes.
Joe Montana.
Yes.
Roger Staubach.
Okay.
Bart Starr.
Yeah.
Warren Moon.
No way.
Help me out here, Peter, man. I need some football quarterbacks.
Dan Marino.
Joe Namath.
Terry Bradshaw, maybe? I don't know. Was he a great quarterback, Terry Bradshaw?
Yeah.
You think so?
Four Super Bowls makes you pretty good.
No. It takes more than a quarterback to win a Super Bowl.
I agree.
I do.
So that's 10 right there.
No, that wasn't.
How many is that?
That's 8.
That's more than...
That was not 8 because, I'm sorry, certain of those guys you mentioned did not count. Just because you named 11 quarterbacks doesn't mean that you named 11 good top 10 quarterbacks. All I'm saying is that Dave Craig very arguably could be in the top 10. Now, I would say I would never be able to say that he's a number one quarterback in NFL history.
Well, the key word there is arguably.
Exactly.
Nobody can argue that he's in the top 10, and I would disagree with that argument.
Precisely. No, I think that his numbers are respectable.
I hope his numbers speak for themselves because he sure can't speak for them.
Okay. Anyway, the point that I was getting at, going back to Dennis Rodman, is that the kinds of sports guys that I admire, the kind of guys that I like, are those who have, that are the gentlemen of the sport. You know, they go out there, they let their playing itself speak for itself, and they leave it on the field.
You mean like Jerry Rice?
Jerry Rice. Maybe.
What do you mean, maybe? He's like the nicest guy in football.
Yeah.
How can you badmouth Jerry
Speaking
Rice?
Speaking of Rice, did you know Rice has been cut?
Really?
Yes. Yes. The Detroit Lions cut strong safety Ron Rice.
Oh, God. See, that would have caught me off guard if Jerry Rice had been cut.
Yeah. No, I don't think anybody's going to cut him very quickly. Maybe in the next year or two.
So you want to talk about college basketball now? How about them Gonzaga Bulldogs?
Gonzaga? Where's Gonzaga? Where's Gonzaga? Oh, my goodness.
Gonzaga.
And you're a sports guy?
Gonzaga.
Are you reading this off
Boston.
Something? Are they from Spokompton or Spokane?
Spokane.
Oh, they're from Spokane, right?
Yeah, Spokane.
Is that like a couple hundred miles west
of Puyallup? Right next to Evett?
Yeah. Well, how about if they're...
Bactria?
How about if they're... Are they near Pandorielli?
What?
Pandorielli. Have you ever heard of Pandorielli?
No, I'm sorry, I haven't.
Well, okay, go ahead and talk a little bit about the Gonzaga Bulldogs and how they have gotten hosed.
Sure, I'll talk about Gonzaga.
You are so silly.
So Gonzaga was ranked 6th in the nation, 29-3 record going into the deciding brackets, where these guys sit down in a closed room and they decide who the top 65 teams in basketball are going to be. 64th and 65th teams play a playoff to decide who actually makes it into the big tournament itself. But these guys sit in a room. They go over stats for the entire season.
Can you read that?
Pandoriel.
Try Pondere.
Pondere.
Yeah.
Ponderosa?
No, Pondere. It looks like it's P-E-N-D, and that's pronounced pond.
Pond.
And then, so it's Pondere, even though it looks like Pandorielli.
Pondere.
Yeah.
Where's that?
It's in Washington. Pondere right. County.
I have no idea where that is.
Well, you did go to a Renton school, so I don't expect you to know much.
Oh, so did you.
No, I went to an Issaquah school.
Yeah, right.
Hello, Liberty is in the Issaquah district.
Where'd you live?
King County.
Where did you live?
King County.
Did you ever live in the town of Renton?
Negative. I lived in unincorporated King County.
Did you spend lots of time in Renton?
As little as possible.
Probably drank the water in Renton as well.
I spent as little time in Renton as possible, actually. I spent most of my time in unincorporated King County. And then after that, I spent even less time in Issaquah. But anyway, getting back to Gonzaga and their
Gonzaga.
Snub. Gonzaga.
So Gonzaga was ranked number 6th, and they go into the tournament.
Number 6th in the nation, right?
Number 6th in the nation. That's out of all 226 teams.
What were the Cougs ranked nationwide? 24?
I think they're like...
From the bottom?
I don't even think they were that high.
I'm probably not even going to get any Cougar gun on the show if I keep talking like that.
We can look forward to next year when they do make the top 64 tournament.
How do you figure?
Because they're going to be really good next year.
Why?
They can't be worse. How about we put it like that?
Okay. You can't be worse.
Bright future.
Okay.
Marcus Moore, one more year of experience under his belt.
Okay. Fair enough.
Gonzaga. So they go into the tournament and they get a 6th seed. A 6th seed in the West. Now, what that means is that there are at least five teams ahead of them in that bracket, and five teams ahead of them in every other bracket too. So by that means they're at least 21st, maybe even 24th ranked in this bracket system. Now what happened though was a good thing that happened was six Pac-10 teams did make the brackets. Our lowest seed is actually an eighth seed, and that's Stanford. Everybody else is higher than an eighth seed.
So Stanford, who's number six in the nation, is ranked almost around where some of these other teams are ranked?
Yeah.
How is that again?
It's kind of funny how it works. I actually watched on ESPN, they were talking about it, that Gonzaga lost to Marquette early on, and Marquette wasn't good until the end of the year. And because they weren't very good at the beginning of the year when they beat Gonzaga, it looked bad for Gonzaga.
Therefore, they suck so bad that they deserve a number six seed in the tournament.
It's kind of like saying, well, the Mariners didn't have a very good draft in 1986, so they're not going to be very good next year. Same kind of logic right there.
Yeah, I guess.
Well, can you remember anybody from the 86 draft?
I can't remember anybody from the 90 draft. Shoot, you know, I can't even remember anybody from the draft like 3 years ago.
90 draft, I can remember that because I thought he was going to be really good. Brent Nackert was our first pick back then.
Brent Nackert, wow, there's a blast from the past.
He kind of fell off the face of the earth, though.
Is he still around?
I have no idea. I haven't heard of him in years, actually.
Minus AAA, something or the other.
He's
Class C ball somewhere.
I'm sure he's coaching T-ball somewhere.
That's terrible.
But let's talk about some football.
So you did hear Rice was cut, right?
Yeah, I heard that Rice was cut. I also heard that Hasselbeck might get cut here pretty soon, too, if he doesn't start improving.
Hasselbeck? Is he from Hasselbach. Gonzaga?
No, he's from Germany. It's Hasselbeck.
Yeah. Sort of like it's Heichmann, right? Okay. How about this? This is actually sort of interesting. Did you hear about Elvis Grbeck?
That he was cut.
He was cut and now is retiring.
Wow. Yes. I didn't know he was retiring.
Elvis Grbeck will retire from the NFL instead of attempting to play for another team, the quarterback's agent said Monday night. Released by the Ravens last week after rejecting a restructured contract, Grbeck also turned down a proposal by the Cincinnati Bengals, and I think most every other quarterback in the NFL has done that. Over the weekend, he told his agent, Jim Steiner, that he's ready to quit football. He is going to retire, said Steiner in a telephone interview. He's got family issues, and the thought of making an additional move is not appealing to him. He has had a great NFL run, a run in the NFL, and he just feels it's time.
You know,
Grbeck, his wife, and the couple's three children live in Cleveland. Although Cincinnati is relatively close, the Bengals made what Steiner termed as a very satisfying offer. The quarterback was not willing to relocate to a fourth team in his career for the third time in 3 years, excuse me. Grbeck left the Chiefs last year to join the Ravens, who signed the Pro Bowl free agent to a five-year, $30 million contract. But Grbeck struggled in his first season with Baltimore, finishing with 18 interceptions and 15 touchdowns. And because of the salary cap, the Ravens had asked him to rework the contract. They essentially asked him to take a $5 million pay cut, which was totally unsatisfactory. So I would assume that's $5 million off of the thirty. So he'd still have a $25 million contract, and I guess $5 million is enough to want to leave. And I'm sorry, $25 million and you're crying over five. Wow.
Well, maybe he's not crying. Maybe he's already rich and he just doesn't really want to play anymore.
Well.
And the money was just an
issue. I would think that most people who play the sports because they love it and not because they're looking to make money.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the case, then they ought not to be in the sport to begin with. The Ravens signed Grbeck less than 3 months after defeating the New York Giants in the 2001 Super Bowl. He was supposed to provide more offensive punch than who?
Would that be Trent Dilfer?
Then Trent Dilfer. But his quarterback rating was 71.1, and that was the number 24th quarterback among starters. However, Grbeck has thrown for more than 17,000 yards in his career, and his 99 touchdown passes compared to 81 interceptions. So he had an off year last year, and I don't know if that's necessarily a wonderful reason to go ahead and, you know, ask the guy to take a huge cut. But then again, if they need to do something for the salary cap, they need to do something. What's interesting also, speaking of Trent Dilfer, is, you know, he's been re-signed by the Seahawks, and part of the deal was is that he would be the starting quarterback. Now, Trent Dilfer did actually a very good job for the Seahawks last year and won, I think, pretty much every game he played in. Ended up last year with a 59.8% completion. He had he was averaging 8 yards a pass. He had 7 touchdowns and 4 interceptions with a rating of 92.
You know what this does, though?
What's that?
Opens up another team where Drew Bledsoe could go.
Well, that's... Oh, yes. Yes, with Baltimore, you mean?
Yeah.
And Baltimore's not too very far off of New England.
No, it's not. There was only one other team before I heard about Gerbach that he has the possibility of going to, and that's Cincinnati.
And he said no, he's not going to go there. He's going to be one of the highest-rated backup quarterbacks in the NFL ever, history.
So it looks like they could end up going to Baltimore with him.
Well, that would be sort of interesting. I want to see Drew Bledsoe be a starter. I'd love to see it be in Baltimore. Actually, I'd love to see it be in a Seahawk uniform, but the chances of that happening, I don't think, are very good.
A lot of the rumors were that he was going to go to Tampa Bay, but Tampa Bay recently got Rob Johnson.
Let me think here. Drew Bledsoe, Rob Johnson? I don't know.
I'll go with Rob Johnson. Just kidding.
Yeah. You also smoke crack on your weekends?
Not this weekend.
Okay. This weekend you're doing your homework.
Yeah.
I was a good student.
I was so focused on my schoolwork this weekend, I had no time to even think about anything else.
Nothing else.
Nothing else.
Nothing at all.
Just schoolwork. No sleep, just schoolwork.
No? Hey, on a side note real quick, did you go to Up All Night?
Yes, I did.
Yes, both Thursday and Friday?
That's correct.
Wow. How did you do in your trivia stuff?
Not quite as good as you did.
So how come you never answered any of the sports questions, Mr. Sports Guy?
Well, I think it was because it was a quarterback question. I didn't know that Peyton Manning did break Rick Meyer's record.
Yeah.
And there you go. There's another quarterback who's better than Dave Craig ever was.
Rick Meyer?
No.
Dude, you are really smoking crack now.
Peyton Manning.
Okay. No, I don't think so.
Why don't you think so? How about Kurt Warner?
Peyton Manning and Kurt Warner.
How about Randall Cunningham?
Have had a couple good seasons, but they're not great quarterbacks.
Great quarterbacks. What makes you a great quarterback?
Having a long season.
How about having 2 Super Bowl rings? Does that make you a great quarterback?
No, it doesn't. Why don't you look at some of the people who were bench warmers?
So Bledsoe's not a great quarterback?
Look at some of the people who are bench warmers on some of those teams and look at their rings. And if they have rings, look at their fingers and see if they have rings. If they have rings, does that mean they're great players? No, it doesn't. It means that they are on a great team.
Kind of like Jed Buschler. He played for the Chicago Bulls and got 5 rings out of that.
Hey, so therefore he was a great player, right? Because he has rings?
Well, if he'd have gotten that 6th ring, yeah. 5 just doesn't cut it.
Not good enough, huh?
No.
Oh, that's too bad. So anyway, it's about 5 minutes till 7:30. Any final sports things before we wrap it up?
Just that spring training starting to wrap up and the Mariner season is getting really close.
Very close. How about the, I guess one other thing to think about is intramural sports is coming up.
Intramural softball's coming up.
Tomorrow morning we'll be signing up the Valley Road Naders. You saw my email. This is the most amazing thing. I just want to tell everybody. Come softball season, you're going to hear a lot about intramural softball. One of the things they instituted, I think it was last year was the first year they instituted this. Maybe it was before that, last season. But they well, other than the icky rules that nobody likes, the like line. The commitment line and everything, which is a whole nother article and issue. I'm talking about after every game you rate the other team for their sportsmanship rating. And our team, we've been around since 96, I believe. We've Rhino and I have played together for, I think, 12 seasons now.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a few other people on the team who had been around, one other person who had been around just as long as us, and then one of our guys who was a pitcher. And both of them seemed to have a little bit of an attitude at times, and especially our pitcher, and sometimes this other guy. And they would talk a little bit of dirt to the other team, and sometimes they would go off on the umpire a little bit. And in one particular game, it was a playoff game, our pitcher was pitching, and he didn't think he was getting good calls, and he complained to the umpire, and the umpire threw him out. Did not yellow card him, did not do anything. He threw him straight out of the game, which I think the umpire did a bad thing there, just on the level that When somebody argues balls and strikes, that's grounds for throwing them out of the game, but usually you give them a warning first, not just directly throw them out of the game.
Yeah.
And it's a playoff game. We are already a player short. It was a situation where essentially that made us almost lose the game. Luckily for us, one of our old pitchers happened to be there watching the game who wasn't playing for us anymore. We ran and got him signed up. He was able to pitch for us, but because having not played the game for about, what, 2 or 3 years, his bat wasn't all that good, and you know, we were hurting in that category. Well, anyway, the umpire told me, he goes, well, I've heard about you guys. You guys have a reputation. I was expecting this. And I'm like, what? You know, like I said, my favorite sports stars are the gentlemen of the sport, you know. And that's my view on things. I like the gentleman sports types. So when I found out that we had some sort of reputation, that we were a bunch of rowdies that gave umpires a hard time, I really did dislike that. So at the beginning of last season, took all the guys and I said, look, you know, here's our reputation from last year. Here's what I did not like about it. And I said, we're going to fix that this year. We're going to, you know, we're going to play well. We're going to, you know, be gentlemen about it. And the website for the intramural sports has the top 10 for all the different sports. And when I was looking at it to see the top 10 team from softball from last season, right underneath that, it said Sportsmanship Award, men's softball, was the Valley Road Naders.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. That is amazing.
It was. I was just like, oh my goodness. I mean, how
we're supposed to get t-shirts for that, right?
Are we?
You get intramural t-shirts for being the sportsman champion.
Well, we better go and talk to him, because the funny thing, I was mentioning this, I was like, okay, here we win this award, and we weren't even told that we won this
that
award.
That is amazing.
Yeah, I was proud of the guys, because it's like, you know, everybody did play a good gentleman's game. Everybody was, you know, a great team player. Nobody talked trash to the other team, even if they would talk trash to us. You know, we played a good game. We were a good team together, and the whole team's coming back with the addition of two new guys. And once again, looking forward to intramural softball coming
up.
Did
you check out that top 10 list, too, what place we finished in?
We were in the top 10. No, we were like number 3 on the list.
We finished second.
No, that's right.
Remember, the champions got dethroned.
Yeah, the champions, the chicken heads got ejected because they had a Major League Baseball player, a pro player, on their team, Rob
Mariner,
Ramsey.
Mariner, nonetheless. Too.
Mariner. So anyway, we played against the Seattle Mariner when we lost to them and got crushed by them. Well, anyway, that's right. We ended up number 2 last year and number 1 for the Sportsmanship Award. So we had a great season last year, and we're expecting another good one this year. And with that, I'd like to go to a song. We will come back with the candidates and time to talk.
All right.
Our phone number is 335-2207. You're listening to KZUU 90.7 FM. You're listening to KZUU 90.7 FM, the Peter Eichmann Show. We have in the studio with us all 3 tickets for the ASWSU president and vice president. We will be with them until we go out of here at 9 o'clock, and we'll be taking your calls at area code 509-335-2207. You can get our website at www.informationtechnologyprofessionals.com/PES, as in the Peter Eichmann Show. Our message board is located at www.witsybanter.com. Once again, our phone number is 509-335-2207. Come check out The Next, up all night with plenty of great entertainment, free food, and a variety of activities. Come join hundreds of your fellow Cougars who just can't stand another night of the same old sitting around looking for something to do. The dates for the rest of the Up All Nights are Friday, April 19th at the Student Rec Center, and Saturday, May 14th at TBA, which I suppose is to be announced. In the studio, once again, we have, we'll be standing by here for a second as the Peter Man works with them. Once again, you're listening to KZUU 90.7 FM, and we have Scott Dickinson, Connor Cook, we have Charles Mayer and Matt Chanel, we have Russell Liebert and Ryan Gamble, and back in the corner there is Brandon something or the other. Anyway, we have a full studio in here. We are going to take phone calls. We expect a few things, and I'd like to go through those before we get going. First and foremost, we expect that any of our callers will ask questions and not make statements. We will ask that our callers are respectful to all of the candidates, and should any caller decide to deviate from those, we will cut them off immediately and go to something else. Other than that, we are giving the candidates an opportunity to speak their minds, to talk about what they find they haven't been able to talk about due to all the other formats throughout the last week have been structured by other people and haven't given the candidates maybe the opportunity to talk about the issues they want to talk about or have the dialogue that they've wanted to have with one another. And with that, we will go ahead and give any one of them the opportunity to start out and discuss whatever it is that you'd like to start discussing. So if anybody wants to step up to the mic. The other thing we have, unfortunately, is one mic, six people, so there might be a little bit of a pause between the speakers. So we have, I think Russell's going to go ahead and get us started here.
All right. Well, I guess the first issue I'll kind of bring up and go off on a little tangent is tuition. And one of the things that Ryan and I want to do if we're elected is have a tuition payment program. Currently, we're the only public university in Washington State right now that doesn't have a tuition payment program. You have to pay it all in one lump sum, and if you don't by a certain date, you get a late fee, and then the debt just continues to accumulate. So what we really want to do is have a program where you can pay every month a certain amount, just like you pay off your housing or anything like that. And that's an idea that we really haven't touched on too much because we've been talking so much about other issues that have to do with tuition and everything, but that's something I'll just throw out there as first idea.
Very nice. How would who would have the opportunity, I mean, as ASWSU president, is that something that you're able to do or work with? Or?
Well, it's not something that we have direct control over, but it's something that, as representing the students, we're able to go to the administration and say, you know, this is something that would really benefit the students. And we can talk to the people over in French Ad, and I'm sure we'd at least have their ear. And it's been done at all these other universities. There's no reason why it really couldn't, so far that I've seen, be done here. I think it's something that just really hasn't been looked at. So that's why we do that.
All right. Anybody? This is pretty much open forum. I mean, if you guys want to respond to what he said, if you guys want to say something completely different, go on to a different subject, it's completely up to you guys today. Just however you guys want to talk about, whatever you guys want to talk about.
Cool. I'll go into something different. I think it's important that multiculturalism and diversity is spoken about. I don't think that it's been talked about enough over this campaign. And Connor and I, what's really important to us is getting out into the community and making sure that every voice is heard. So through our Community Senate Wednesdays and our Tuesday talks, we'll be getting the Senate out to the different living groups, to different organizations here on campus, through Community Senate Wednesdays. And then through Tuesday talks, we'll be going out and reaching out to all the students here on campus, getting their names out there. Rather than waiting on the third floor of the Cub for people to come find us, I think it's really important that as student leaders that we go out and we speak with all students. So that's just one of the ideas, and multiculturalism is just one of the things that I think needs to be spoken about more.
So who is it that needs to speak about multiculturalism some more? And when you speak about it, what is it that you need to speak about?
I was just mentioning that I don't think it came up enough during the campaign. I don't think enough students asked enough questions, and I don't necessarily believe that all the candidates brought it up enough. Because diversity here on campus is really important, making sure that we're retaining our students and that we're recruiting students and faculty and keeping them here on campus so that everybody's well represented and everybody feels welcome.
Very nice. Anybody else have a comment about that? Don't have to be shy. You can step up and speak. All right. So when we did have the candidates on last week, unfortunately, Mr. Dickinson and Mr. Cook were unable to be here, and some of their ideas were not represented on the show. And I'm sure most of you, if you've been following along in the newspaper or during the forums or anything, have had an opportunity to hear their ideas. But maybe this would be a great time for them to touch on some of the major bulleted points for the issues for ASWSU this year. Things like tuition and Pullman Transit, diversity, which of course was touched on a little bit, and whatever else.
Thank you. Scott and I really want to reach out to the community. We really want to bring the campus together because we don't feel that that's being done enough. We are going to be going out into the community and taking a proactive stance. We're going to also be doing that in regard to tuition.
KZU.
We're going to be going over to Olympia, and we're going to be making those, just being involved in the process so that things like the transit issue and the tuition transit issue don't come up and kind of sneak up on us like they did this year.
Go for it. Yeah, actually, going back to the diversity issue just for a second, first of all, I thought I'd plug, tonight we're having a debate with the Council of Multicultural Student Presidents, and that's going to be in the Lair, 8 o'clock. I guess they moved the time to 8 o'clock, and yeah, that's what I heard last night. So it's 8, I think, or 8:30. But if you get there by 8, you'll certainly find us. It's for the executive tickets. 7 for the senators. And we'll certainly be talking about, committees, multicultural committees, diversity, and those issues a lot more. I think one thing, too, like going back to communication and getting, like what Dickinson was talking about, with getting out there to students, I think it's really important also to help facilitate the communication between between all of the committees that we represent and the administration, but in particular between the multicultural student groups. I think that in the past, the administration has got to a point where they're trying to listen, and they're trying to understand, but they really, it's like they're going about it the wrong way. And I think that the student government can really make a dent in helping with that. An example of incorrect communication would be the Stand for Diversity, the Stand for Diversity event that went on last semester. The purpose, the idea behind it is excellent. Problem is the university put a bunch of money into it. Administration really, wanted to put that on and everything. But they didn't go out to the committees. They didn't really have a bunch of communication with them. The committees could have put on a lot of the different events or had a different spin on it or brought new ideas and everything. And the administration didn't seem to really actively seek that input. And that's something that's really important. I mean, if you're putting on an event that's a Stand for Diversity, then you really should be making an attempt to include the students who, represent the diversity of Washington State University. And so I think that's an example of something that we really need to have better communication with.
Okay. Go ahead.
I think one of the ways that Connor and I plan on combating this this idea of better communication is through no longer having a minority affairs director, but rather having a director of multicultural awareness and recruitment, and underneath that director having two interns. I think it's really important that we get more students active and we're getting more student leaders out there with the students. So through the director of multicultural awareness and recruitment, they'll be facilitating the university's needs for more voices to getting out there with the students, rather than having someone reporting back to the ASWSU president or vice president. I think it's important that we have someone who's reporting to the students and telling the students what's going on, working with the director of communications to getting a clear and unified message out to all students and out to the state, so that when people think of Washington State University, they think of a welcoming, diverse campus where all students are represented and all of their voices are heard.
All right, we got a caller. We'll go ahead and get him on the air here in a second for a question. Caller, can you hear us?
Yes, sir.
All right, go ahead and ask your question.
Yeah, I was wondering if the stance Mr. Dickinson is taking on diversity is directly related to what happened at the debate on Friday night.
Okay.
Oh, of course not. And
thank you, caller.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate the question, and of course not. And all of the debates beforehand, we had spoke on diversity, and this issue was mentioned. Nothing is because of Friday night's debate. But thanks for letting me clarify that. I appreciate it.
Okay. Alrighty. Mr. Dickinson and Mr. Connor Cook obviously weren't here, and we talked a little bit about diversity. But how do you guys plan on saving Pullman Transit or working to save Pullman Transit,
if they want,
or if you even want to save it?
Well, absolutely, and one way we're going to do that is try and reclassify the federal government's look on Pullman Transit. The way Pullman Transit gets its money is through a federal grant, which is dispersed by the state to rural areas throughout the state. And rural areas that are less efficient get a bulk of the money. The problem with Pullman Transit is that we're very efficient. We serve a lot of our people, a lot of our students, and our population is under 50,000 people. So what we've been trying to do is go to the state legislature and ask them to understand that and ask them to give us a different classification so that we can get some more of that grant money or a different type of grant money. And by doing that, we'll be able to keep Pullman Transit around as it runs today.
Through this reclassification of what of how Pullman Transit is, it won't be an unpredictable amount of money that the city will be getting from the state. The grant that is administered by the state is a pool of money, and it's bid upon. And we need to make sure that Pullman Transit has predictable cash inflow each year so that they can plan accordingly.
Okay. What about your view on one of the issues that one of your competitors or one of the other people running is pay cuts for the executive staff and for the president and vice president? And what are your views on that?
I think that it's really important that the president and vice president are held accountable. And I think that one of the ways to hold them accountable is to pay them. It comes up every year. Should we be paying our president or vice president? It's discussed if senators should be paid. I just think that it's important that people are held accountable and that they're compensated for the hard work that they put in. Vice President Brown and President Keene and the exec staff put in hours upon hours working on behalf of the students, and I'm up on the third floor to see it. And I think that it's important that for the hard work that they put in, that they're compensated for it.
Okay, do senators get paid?
No, senators do not get paid.
Okay, how are they held accountable?
Sure. That's just it, is that a lot of the time the Senate is said, well, what are you guys doing for us? And all we can say is, well, you know, we're going out there, we're working on your behalf, we're meeting with people, and we're talking with people.
Okay. Cook, you're going to say something?
Well, one of the things about the senators that you ask is that I think by serving a year without being paid, I think it shows a devotion to SWSU. Both Scott and I have been serving and are serving on the current Senate right now, and we're clearly devoted to SWSU because we're not being paid. Something that I think would be interesting is if senators did get paid, and then they could move on to an exec staff position where they were paid again anyway. And I think that by not being paid for a Senate position, you show that you're devoted to the work, you're devoted to the students, and then you can move on to a paid position down the road. And I think that's important.
Okay, Mr. Dickinson. Excuse me, sorry, Mr. Mayor has something to say.
I just wanted to mention the fact that the bylaws currently written do stipulate that the senators can get paid. Fortunately, this year we didn't have enough money to pay the senators. And that's the only right reason this year they're not being paid. It has nothing to do with their dedication to serve or anything like that. I believe all of us are here to serve because that's what we're excited about. That's what we want to do. But there are stipulations in the bylaws to allow for the pay of the senators.
Okay, thank you. We need to really quick take the top of the hour break. We'll be away for about a minute and a half or so. And when we come back, we'll continue with your questions and the candidates. Once again, you can give us a call at 509-335-2207.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Peter Eichmann Show on KZUU 90.7 FM, and we have once again the candidates for ASWSU president and vice president in the studio with us. We are going to continue talking about the issues and taking your calls at area code 509-335-2207. I'll go ahead and put the candidates back on the air and let them speak about whatever issues they would like to talk about. And I think Mr. Dickinson might be the first to talk, maybe.
Actually, it'll be Mr. Liebert.
Okay, Mr. Liebert, let's give us a start.
All right. I guess the next issue that we thought we'd talk about would be parking services. Acceptable, as far as I'm concerned. Budget is an increase in 66% average for parking tickets. And what was it, like 50% or something, or 60% for passes?
For the actual passes? Well, it ranges depending on where you're at.
Yeah.
So
it's a lot. It's really high, though.
Yeah. If he has an orange lot, how much is going up?
I'm not sure how much mine is going up.
It's almost doubling, I think, actually. Yeah, the orange ones are...
I'm afraid to see what it's going to cost. I don't know if I can afford it.
Yeah. $109
for orange, I guess.
Ouch.
30% increase.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, they're only being allowed to... The orange ones are only going to be allowed to... students won't be able to have them. New students won't... They'll be able to get on a list, but they probably won't get them. Faculty and staff will have the first pick, and people who already have it will obviously be able to kind of grandfathered in. But it's a large concern because it's another place where prices are really being increased. One thing that Ryan and I want to do, obviously, is better communication between parking services. We want to see them have a lot more outreach. Traditionally, they kind of, like ASWSU has sat up in its treehouse on the third floor of the Cub. Well, they've kind of, sat down in their treehouse down in the
little bit of a cave almost.
Yeah. It's kind of scary down there. But, yeah, they have a bunch of different pamphlets and things like that that they've talked about that they have there that you can go and get. But we want to see them really getting out more to the individual students. This year they've done a pretty good job going around to groups and telling them about how much they're going to raise it. I would like to see more communication, more active communication with the rate settings and everything. I know they had a committee this year doing that, but I don't think that the voice of the students was really accurately portrayed. I mean, I know the Senate was very surprised when we got a hold of the whole budget. That was a long meeting. But, communication is, I think, really important. And I think that the people who use the garages should be paying for them. That's something that's a large increase in cost. And that's something...
I'm totally against that, by the way. I think it should be a welfare system where everybody helps to pay.
I have an email that I can forward to anybody who's interested in his opinion on it.
I think there's a lot of programs that, you do need everybody to pay for, but the garages are something that are used by a select group of people, I think, and that I think that it's better for those people to use them because it's such a drain on the rest of the system, and they use it to just hike up the prices and everybody else. So you can probably talk more about that now. You look pretty, riled up over there.
So. Interesting. There's another candidate that feels the same way I do about the issue. How do you feel about that, Scott?
Actually, Mr. Mayor, do you think that us poor people who park in the garage should have to pay for it all ourselves? Is it going to be a 3 out of 3 thing here?
I don't really park in the parking garage except during the weekends. I don't have a parking permit, so...
so you pay the hourly rate?
So I pay the hourly rate.
They should jack that up.
Yeah. Gee, thanks. One of the things that was mentioned is that there needs to be more communication with students. I believe that the voices of the students are being heard. I know Carson Hoyt was on the committee, and he's in touch with a lot of students. Jen Estroff, the RHA president, was also on the committee, and she's pretty well got her finger on the pulse of what's going on around here, too. A lot of the parking rates is going up is pretty much a necessary evil. Nobody wants to see it happen, but it's undeniable. It's going to have to happen. As for the parking fines, you know, I can't really complain about the parking fines, because if you're parking legally, then you shouldn't have a problem with them.
That's a good point.
But as for the parking garages, I pay my hourly rate, so I'm not terribly upset about that.
Okay.
I think that that Russell brought up a good point about communication. And Connor and I, we have the opportunity this year to sit on the SNA and the SNA Fees Facility Committee. And after one of the meetings, we got to talk with Glenn Ford at length for probably about an hour just about the parking issue. And increasing the communication that the students have with the administration was really important to him. And I think that Connor and I, we started that this year in having the opportunity to talk with him. And he was really impressed that we came up to him and we engaged him on the issue. I think that more students need to be active. And I think that by Connor and I taking that initial step and expressing the concerns of the Senate, I think that it shows the real possibilities that there are for cooperation between the administration and everybody coming together and working together so that we don't see these increases so unpredictably like we are this year. We're seeing tuition going up. We're seeing parking going up. We're seeing rec center fees going up. Fees across the board are going up, and we just need to make sure that the students we can still afford to go to school here. Because if the university is pricing people out of an education, then what's the point of them sitting up there in French ad? Because sooner or later, they're not going to have a job.
Very good.
Yeah, it's really a matter of making students' voices heard. And by going and speaking with these administrators and by going to the Capitol and being seen, we get students' voices heard. And I think Glenn was really, really receptive to a lot of our ideas. And one of the things he mentioned is that hasn't really happened in the past, that the Senate and ASWSU hasn't really gone and sat down with him and said, this is what we're hearing from students and this is what we think needs to happen. And yeah, we came up with some great ideas and he was going to take those back to the board. And so I think that's something very useful that Scott and I have that's going to be effective next year.
Ms. Liebert.
All right. I think also, first of all, I just... Oh, is it on?
Yeah, it's on.
Okay.
You got it.
One thing that I want to bring up is I kind of disagree with Mr. Mayer on one of the things, and that's that the voices, the students' voices are being heard. I think that there is a little bit of a problem when what it seems like is coming across is, well, don't raise the hourly rates and don't raise the meter rates, and then everything else is fine. You know, raise everything else to the amount that you need. And I don't think that that's the general consensus of the student voice. I don't think that most students believe that. I mean, none of the students, with the exception of maybe four or five, have really voiced that concern to me. And as far as communication, too, communication was brought up. And, you know, talking to John Shaheen, the director of parking services and transportation and everything, I think that's important. One thing that we also have that John Shaheen would certainly be able to use is that we'd like to have the position of an outreach coordinator. Director of Outreach Coordinator. And the Outreach Coordinator, among other responsibilities in a lot of different areas, one thing is that they could be facilitated by John Shaheen along with us and the Communication Director and work with trying to get information back to them from the students and then also from a large mass of students like different umbrella groups and organizations. And then also getting information through the Communications Director out to the students in the form of advertising, forums, talks, you know, actually going out there and voicing our concerns to students and everything, and so that they know about, you know, how parking services works and everything. I think also as far as communication too, it's not really the first time the Senate has really taken an active approach with parking services. It goes in cycles. All of it goes in cycles. And since the student climate changes, you know, obviously the communication that they want to hear and what we're requiring in parking services changes. And for the last few years, it certainly has been lax. I know when I was a freshman, people were pretty active in the parking service issue, and then it's kind of gone downhill since then. And so, surprise, surprise, we see, you know, these rates going up again.
Okay. Now, you guys are talking about communication and communication between, you know, administration and ASWSU and students in ASWSU and parking services and the students in ASWSU and whatnot. One question I have is, how have you as candidates been communicating with the current outgoing president and vice president so you're on the same page as them?
How shall we count the ways?
Okay. Anybody want to start on that one? Mr. Dickinson, okay.
Yeah, I can start. I've had the great opportunity to work with Vice President Annie Brown really closely this year. As the pro temp of the Senate, the Vice President, the pro temp, work really close together to making sure that the Senate's being... make sure that we're working productively and getting things done. And then I'm speaking with Kelly Walsh, the ASWSU Chief of Staff, about the issues that are going on. And then President Keene and I, we dialogue regularly on the issues. And other than just talking about whatever's going on in our lives, we make sure that each other are up to date on what the Senate's working on, what the executive branch is working on.
Very good.
I just want to mention that, you know, Jesse and I are pretty close, and we talk a lot about the issues, and we disagree a lot on the issues, but we also just kind of share and bounce ideas off of each other, and that's been very effective.
Okay. Mr. Liebert.
It's real hard being up here in kind of the cramped office with the executives and the senators not to, you know what's going on and everything. I mean, if there's a paper dropped or anything, everybody, you know, reads it and stuff. So I've always been over there and talking to them. We all go through the same, you know, office and always see them. And a lot of it's casual, but also we always see them in meetings and stuff. We hear reports from them every Senate meeting. And I've been in touch with the last two presidents because I'm a two-term senator. So I've kind of got the perspective of how things have changed and everything from administration to administration. And it's interesting. It's really good because they have sometimes a complete different set of connections and a complete different set of information than the senators have. We've got a lot more connection directly to constituents and see a lot more things that go on like I guess you could say a classroom basis, you know, small groups and everything around in different areas. Whereas a lot of the executives kind of have a broader scheme of where, you know, the movements of the administration, the campus. And it's a really nice mix. It's a really, you know, it helps us in looking at decisions and coming up with new ideas.
Okay. And Charles is going to give us his input.
As they said, it's been real easy to communicate with the executive branch. They're real open, fun to talk to. We've had a lot of fun working with them. And, you know, it's difficult not to communicate when, you know, Vice President Brown makes a point of having a meeting with all of the vice presidential candidates, give them an idea of what's going on in the executive office. They've made a real point of trying to get to us and talk to us and everything like that, and it's been a joy to work with them.
Thank you. Mr. Dickinson.
I also think it's important to plug Annie and Jesse again, just because of how positive they've been during this whole thing. They're two really active people, and I know for both of them it's been really hard not to be in a campaign this year. And I think that both of them, they've been really positive on every issue and on every front, regardless of who's running. And they're really dedicated to making sure that the leadership, whoever wins whoever wins on Wednesday, is transitioned well and will start shadowing as soon as possible, so that it's seamless as we go into the summer and we start next school year.
Okay. What does that mean to your senatorial duties then, if you do get elected?
It means that you're still a senator, and for myself, I would still be the pro temp, and you still keep working as a senator, but you just start going to more meetings, and you start meeting with more students. I'm going out, and you start working with the administration closer than we are right now, and just making ties and connections and starting to build relationships that are stronger.
Okay.
Yeah, I just thought it really, really is important to thank Jesse and Annie for everything they've done. They've worked very, very hard this year. I know that they'll continue to work very, very hard this year for students, and they've really done a spectacular job. And it's really exciting to think that I'll be able to help continue that work, and that Scott will be able to also.
Okay.
Yeah, I think one way that it also, you know, Like we're going to continue being senators and everything. I mean, it doesn't slow down after this for me. I mean, the end of the week might be like a little hip hip hooray and everything, but after that, you know, it's going to be spring break, which is great. And then it comes back and we dive right into budget hearings. I'm the director of the budget committee and the finance committee, so that's going to be some crazy times. And then, you know, a few of us here are on the facilities fee committee, so we'll be plugging along and trying to, you know, learn whatever new duties if we're elected. And yeah, going back to the whole, this is kind of cool, plugging the Jesse and Annie Keene, Annie Brown thing. Yeah, Annie Keene. I don't know. I view them as one, you know, they're probably listening right now going, what? And heading up here, but, Yeah, as far as Annie wanting to get involved in campaigns, she almost did, because there was this rumor all of a sudden that we heard. Like, we had people coming up to us, like, a month ago, and they were like, you know, yeah, we hear you and Annie are running. You know, you're running and everything. We're like, what? What's going on? So we finally talked to each other, and we're like, what's going on? What are you talking, you know, spreading or anything? Neither of us were spreading anything. We're like, what's going on? So we start looking around, and lo and behold, it's Jesse Keen that started this with some of his execs and everything. They were going out and telling people, yeah, they're running, you know, I hear they're running and everything. So we had this big joke for a long time that her and I were running, but the rumor is not true. So
very nice.
I hope it's not true. Otherwise, we've been getting Ryan's name wrong.
And her voice has changed.
Changed the whole bunch.
And somehow I don't think that Annie would run for vice president again. So,
no. So let me ask Mr. Cook, why did you choose to be the vice president of the ticket? Or was that, what is it that about vice president that makes you want to do that job?
Well, it's something that Scott and I talk a lot about, and really it comes down to just fitting best in the roles. And Scott and I work very well together. We've discussed a lot of these issues. We've talked about it over and over again to make sure that we were making the right decision for the students on this campus. And I'm really excited to work with the Senate. Scott had an opportunity to pretty much do that this year, being the pro temp of the Senate, and I'm really excited to kind of take on that role. And he's really excited to move on and be president. I also am really excited to work with the SWC committees. Obviously, as you can see in the paper today, communication with them still needs improving. And something I had said earlier got a little misconstrued, but really I think it's working on that and making sure that our liaison assignments and things like that are accomplished properly and continuing on and learning the lessons that we learned this year and making those better for next year.
Okay.
Did you want me to speak about why Connor? Why we're...
Sure. Okay. Yeah, I'd like...
why Connor? why Connor? We'll be the best vice president for...
Too many people ask why Connor. It's really something that happens too often.
Oh, wow.
Why Connor?
Well, obviously, Connor this year being the chair of the External Affairs Committee and being a District 10 senator, I think that he's had the opportunity to show his true colors shine and to move on to be the vice president of the students and to help lead the students. So we both approached each other, and this is the solution that we came to, and I think it's going to work best for students.
Thank you.
All right, I have a question for you guys here, just for all of you. I know that the Liebert Gamble ticket is for lowering the speed limits on Stadium Way.
Oh, great. We'll tackle that
first.
That's
what I've heard, but I was wondering what the rest of the candidates thought about that, and I'm asking this on behalf of my good friend here, Scooter.
Great. I think that it's really important that we recognize that this is a college university and we're not an elementary school. You look both ways and you listen before you cross the street, and if you walk out in front of a car and that car is running straight at you, well, you know, you should have looked again. I think it's really important that people take responsibility for their own actions before they cross a street.
Or you could just use the crosswalks, but that's an idea.
Oh, okay. That ticks me off, man. That is absolutely, that's taken out of context. Oh, geez. So the deal is that there's a problem on campus because a lot of pedestrians have had problems getting across campus. And people are using the crosswalks. One of the problems is that a lot of vehicles aren't recognizing those crosswalks. And the thing is, a lot of vehicles go a lot faster than 25 miles an hour on Stadium Way. We would like to see, a slight increase in either prevention or enforcement, which sometimes those are two different things, as we see with parking services. But I think that, you know, what the comment came up about lowering the speed limit was because there was a suggestion by Ryan Gamble that we turn the parts of the campus into what's called a campus zone. And oftentimes on other universities, those areas are 20 miles an hour And that would be a result of turning it into that. But they tend to, I mean, it's a downside, but it tends to dramatically decrease the incidences of people being hit. And
what's the incidences currently on campus of people being hit?
Actually, I don't have the statistics on that. I don't know off the top of my head. Carpin's been hit, apparently. Seriously, you know, I know a lot of people who I've talked to, and it's a large problem that, you know, they don't feel like, you know, that they can get to class in time, and they don't feel like they can, you know, get across campus in a quick manner without being, you know, threatened by vehicles. I mean, obviously, we all want the freedom to drive around campus and everything.
I'm just curious, you know, those footbridges, do they ever debate on using those ones?
Yeah, they use
those
too.
About a block radius.
What are you just slinging? Are you slinging mud? I mean, this is just turning into a mud fest.
No, it's just it's just from, you know, personal experience. I find that living in Waller Hall, when I go across the street to the Roto to eat, I find that when I step in the crosswalk, all the cars stop for me.
Well, but if you stay there on the side of the road, they just continue to go because they don't know you're crossing.
You know, actually, I actually almost always just, like, I'll look, but I walk out. And
that's how it needs to happen.
Now, see, the thing is, though, that there's been a few times when they haven't stopped. And, no, I wasn't hit, but I had to run pretty darn fast to get across.
But how close was the car when you stepped in front of it? I mean, you got to give it time to stop.
About a block away or so.
How
50.
Slow were you walking?
You're not going to win this question.
I mean, we're talking, what, 10 feet?
The main issue that it goes back to is safety on campus. And I think that, and also respect of fellow students and everything. And, you know, people aren't slowing down for students crossing walks. The other thing, too, is in Washington State, any corner to corner is a legal crosswalk. Even if it's not marked, that's a crosswalk. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of drivers who say, "What, you know, why is this person, they're crossing the middle of the road, they're jaywalking, you know." And they almost aim for them sometimes, it seems like. And also, you know, that issue was brought up with the intersection of Nevada Avenue and Stadium Way. And for people who don't know which street that is, it's the one that connects into Olympia by Orton and Rogers, and it's really
right next by the hospital in Waller.
Exactly,
and
And that's an area that's had a lot of problems. Around 4:30, 5 o'clock, it's a bottleneck.
For students to walk across the road?
It's a problem for students to walk across the road, and it's a problem
for people
driving. What
about that footbridge thing there that's been there for years?
Well, some people are trying to go directly to, like, the hospital, or they're trying to go...
Does a footbridge not get them across the street?
Sure, it does, but, you know, there's a... Jeez.
I'm sorry, Russell. We're just having fun.
All right. Well, I think we've beat this one to a pulp.
Well, what about the proposed or the ideas of proposing to put a light in there? Would that solve a lot of the problems without lowering the speed limit?
Well, actually, that's another one of the things that we brought up. And that area isn't too bad as far as lighting compared to a lot of other areas on campus.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I meant a stoplight. Like,
oh, yeah.
Red,
oh,
green,
yeah.
Yellow.
The one, yeah, actually, Pullman City Council has been looking at that because that's a city issue because it's actually owned by the city. They've been looking at that for about 3 or 4 years. It's really been a problem. Every year, though, it comes up, you know, obviously the budget's been going down, especially since I-695. It's been a real hard thing. Well, we definitely want to look more into doing that and even seeking some state funds if we can get it to put in a light there. That'd be a really good thing to do.
As District 10 Senator, I was able to work on a really good committee that fits really well with the position, and that was the External Affairs Committee, which I was chair of this entire year. And one thing we did look at was putting a light right there on the Stadium Way intersection that you speak of. And we've gotten pretty far with it. And in fact, I think it's going to be in the plan for the Stadium Way, kind of renovation, I guess, if you will. And so that's really, really something that should help out a lot. Scott, did you have something to say?
Okay. I got a question for you, Connor. Let's take the spotlight off of poor. Oh, wait. Charles has something. Charles, let's hear from Mr. Mayor.
Okay. It's my turn. I agree that a lot of the crosswalks need to be maintained. They need to better police those areas. Unfortunately, the police department, the WSU police department, does not have as large a presence on campus as it really should. It's fun to listen to people talking about trying to lower the speed limit, that sort of thing. For those of you who receive the Pullman update and actually read it, the Pullman City Council is possibly going to be raising speed limits around town, including Main Street, and I have no doubt that Stadium Way is one that they're looking at. So it's going to be interesting to work with the Pullman City Council and get all the views heard.
Very nice. Hey, Mr. Cook. Okay. There was at the Wall of Debate, something was said, and you never elaborated on it. I was just hoping you could do that right now for me. Talking about safety, you said that safety is a huge concern in the residence halls, and I was curious if you could elaborate on that.
Well, I mean, I think it's a huge concern on campus. I mean, I don't think it really matters what community you look to. I think it is an issue. And we've been really working in external affairs on that. One of the major problems we are running into is the budget problems. I mean, there's budget problems everywhere. And so you try and put a street light up here, you try and put a street light up there, and it's really a matter of money, believe it or not. But we've made a lot of progress on some of these projects, and it's gone very well, I think.
I think it's important to make sure that on campus that just safe, take for instance women, that women's safety is such an issue, and with women's transit, we need to make sure that more people are getting involved with that, and there's been a good discussion about the Waller Escort Service and how that could help. I believe that discussion was brought up by Senator Liebert with the Waller Escort Service and women's transit, just making sure that everybody has the opportunity to feel safe here on campus. Because if you can't walk from Todd back to your residence hall, then without feeling that you'll be attacked or something like that, then that's no atmosphere that we would want to foster here on campus.
Okay, Mr. Liebert.
Yeah, I think a good point to make is making sure that the campus is safe for everyone, because safety isn't just a woman's issue. It's an issue that needs to be addressed for all students. I think that continuing the lighting projects is a really important thing that we need to do. The past Senator Eastman and current student regent Darren Eastman has done a lot of work on that. He actually has satellite images of Pullman at night that point out areas that are dark. And I think, you know, we really want to use things like that. That's great information. That's a great resource. And stuff like that to continue the lighting. As far as what was talked about with the Waller Hall and women's transit, there was a lack of volunteers this year in women's transit and a lack of budget. And the Waller Escort Service was still continuing, but not many people knew about it because of the lack of advertising. And if we can get these two groups working together and helping each other, I think that would be a really good thing. This is something that we need to have women's transit around, and not just, you know, necessarily for women, but a service that, you know, allows for people to go across campus anytime that they want and be able to feel safe. And one thing that goes into that is Cougar Transit, and looking at Cougar Transit, which is a real tight issue and everything. And I think Connor probably, do you want to talk about Cougar Transit? All right.
Russell, I would love to talk about Cougar Transit. An idea we came up with was using some of the university vans to move more people at night, whether it was males or females, from the bars or from parties. It didn't really matter. We were trying to make kind of a more effective system that could move more people. Because right now women's transit only takes kind of one woman at a time, and sometimes that can cause a problem. It ends up making women say, well, I can just walk instead of waiting for a ride and stuff like that. The same problem is kind of what we ran into is lack of funding, lack of money, and where to come up with that. We've been using it in conjunction with Up All Night to try and get students to Up All Night and back home, which has been quite effective, and I think we're going to try and continue to do that. But we're going to try and put as much of the effort that we've put into what we came up with Cougar Transit and try and work with Kathy Zekas and try and maybe come up with some ideas and some input and really try and put those ideas in all our efforts into women's transit, making sure that women are safe on this campus.
Okay. Scott, you didn't have anything to say on that?
Yeah, Scott agrees with me just about on everything because, yeah. Because
we're a great team.
Because we're a great team.
What happened to that?
Mr. Mayor, did you have anything to say on that?
You're just sitting here, Carpenter.
Sure looks like he does.
Well, I'm not going to disagree with anyone that safety is an important issue. It's got to be dealt with every year, and that includes keeping women's transit running at a high level so that they've got enough drivers, they've got enough vehicles to pick people up. And so safety is always going to be an issue, and it always needs to be addressed, and there's no reason why, you know, we would forget about any of that. So
There you have it.
Thank you.
And I'm going to start making all my fraternity brothers drive cars. So that would be good.
How do you plan on doing that?
Really, it's just a matter of physical force. So.
Are you one of the bigger members of the house?
Yeah, he is.
So are you, in a roundabout way, are you trying to say you don't care about the environment or smog pollution or anything in Pullman? Or?
That's really funny.
Alrighty, Mr. Liebert.
Yeah.
Should you be elected president, mm-hmm. would you be willing to work on getting Cougar Transit or a system like Mr. Cook talks about implemented on campus?
Well, we need to get something implemented. I mean, women's transit obviously is in kind of dire straits right now, and we really need to work on that. Cougar Transit, looking at an issue is not a problem. I mean, we're going to be looking at any number of issues. I'm sure anyone here who's elected is going to be looking at all of the ideas that have been brought up by all candidates because they're all important. And I think that, yeah, okay, I heard that. But one of the things, though, is a feasibility. That's where it really, you know, comes down to it, is looking into, you know, how feasible is something. And with Cougar Transit, that's one of the main kind of objections, is the feasibility of it. How much is it going to cost? But it's certainly something that, yeah, Ryan and I both, you know, we want to look at it. We have looked into it a little bit. It came up last year, too, when I was on the Senate, and we had a chance to kind of review it and everything. But it wasn't an option, really, last year because of the funding and the rec center and everything. So.
Okay, so is with women's transit being in dire straits, like you're talking about, what is it that's putting it in such a bad situation, position?
One thing is there was a huge decline this year in volunteer support. They really didn't have enough people to be able to run the service and everything, and there were a lot of hours that were, you know, they wanted to have more drivers. I also think that, you know, maintenance of the vehicles is another big cost. And I think that they were having trouble with you know, having the funding for those. So, again, always, you know, money is the issue. But also human resources was a large problem, I think even a larger problem this year for them. And a place that they can find that resource, I think, is like the Waller Escort Service. And also looking around, I think the people are out there. The people are willing to volunteer. It's just that the information wasn't communicated as well as it could have been to the students about the issue. And there wasn't enough hurrah raised about it so that students would know about it and be able to get involved.
Mr. Dickinson.
Yeah, women's transit, it's a safety prevention. It's making sure that women are safe. And
yeah, Scott, not safety prevention.
No, sorry. Hey, no. It's really early. Come on. It's Monday morning. I got up at 6:30. When does this? This never takes place. Okay. Meanwhile, back in the studio. gosh. So, I lost my train of thought and everything now. No, I was not on safety prevention. Thank you. Jeez. Anyways, with women's transit, it's under the Women's Resource Center, and all of the departments in the university are being cut. They reduced their budget by, I believe, 5% at least. So that goes into to women's transit, and they're going to have to reduce their budget as well. So we have to make sure that there's funding there for that to continue next year. And just communicating the idea of what women's transit is to the students, telling them that, look, we want to prevent something happening to the women on campus, and making sure that they can go from place to place and feel safe. With that, I'm finished with women's transit. I thank you for the opportunity to speak on the issue.
Very good. Okay, every year about 4,000 new students come to campus, namely freshmen. What are you guys going to do about improving and increasing freshman involvement?
If you want to go up for it first, Charles wants to get up here first.
I think Mr. Cook's going to go ahead and lead the way here.
Yeah, one of the ways we're going to do it is to kind of incorporate the FACES program in with Alive. Scott and I have talked a lot about this, and we've really looked into it. And FACES is a really good program. The current director of FACES, Kristen Eby, has done a spectacular job getting it off the ground. And really, it's just a matter of making it more effective and coming up with new ideas and stuff like that. So, using it during a live, getting those freshmen active on campus events and services is key, and it's going to be a very positive thing.
The president and vice president during a live have a great opportunity to speak with every freshman that comes through the program and to put on a program for the parents about involvement in activities on campus and around Pullman. So through those two venues, by speaking directly to students and explaining to them the program, how it works, why it's important that they get plugged in and involved right away, I think will only increase the numbers of participation. And then parents also play a huge influence on students when they're here on campus and those first few months that they're here. Students go through a lot of emotions of homesickness or that, yeah, wow, I'm free, I'm away from school. And when they feel that, yeah, wow, I'm free, I'm away from school, it's really important that they have the options, all the options here on campus available to them about what different types of sports teams they can get involved in, different ASWCU committees to the different recognized student organizations. We need to make sure that students have an avenue to get active here on campus, and through FACES is the perfect program that was established this year to get that going.
Okay, Mr. Mayor.
FACES has actually been picked up by the university. It's being shifted over to student involvement, which means that it will be promoted more during live, so fortunately we'll be able to get more freshmen involved that way. Another a way to get people involved is to get the information out better through the Evergreen. Keenan Brown have been trying to get a full page ad placed in the Evergreen. Unfortunately, there's been some discrepancies between the two organizations, so that hasn't gotten off the ground just yet, but allowing the students to know what's going on and how they can get involved is one of the best ways to, like I say, get people involved. And since most of the students on campus read the Evergreen, a full page ad detailing what's going on and the programming that's being done. I mean, if you've got a whole list of exciting activities that the committees are planning, it's going to get people involved. They're going to want to go and do some of the stuff that the committees are planning. I mean, increasing programming, the quality and the amount is key to getting people involved.
Okay, Mr. Lieber, do you have anything to say?
Yeah, sure. A little bit of it's going to be just reiteration. I think that the Freshman Active in Campus Events and Services is an excellent program, FACES. And I had a chance to go to one of their meetings and everything, and I think that it's a really welcoming environment, and I really think you need to break the ice and have a nice comfort zone for freshmen when they first come here. Sometimes they're a little bit out of their zone. One of the largest problems, obviously, with FACES was that it was introduced about 3 months into the semester, 2 months into the last semester, and that was because it was a new program. And, you know, it's always hard to start up a new program. But this year we'll have the opportunity to put it in with Alive and really, really push it there. And I think it's really important, too, because when freshmen traditionally come to this campus, one, they're living in the residence halls, or they almost always are, and then usually what they're active in is the living groups or the living group government or those kind of things, or, you know, student government. And I think that there's a whole wide world of different things that you can be involved in at WSU or really any place. There's so many variety of things. And FACES is a program that really does a good job of educating them about all the different things because, student government or getting involved in just a hall government, it isn't for everyone. I mean, I really loved it, and I still love student government. But, you know, there's the committees and multicultural aspect of it. That's real important. I think also just, you know, different clubs and RSOs, those are also really important. Or being able to get the skills to be able to do something that isn't provided on campus. That's really key. That's great because then they have the opportunity to offer that to other people. And that's one reason why I'm involved and why I'm a leader is because
I really, really enjoy going out and finding other people who have great potential and just don't have the connections, and trying to show them, like, look, this is what my experience has been, and this is what my experience being a cougar has been, and, you know, this is how you can do it too, or this is, you know, what are you interested in? What do you want to do while you're here? And I think FACES and also a variety of other programs, and just getting students the information, and one-on-one contact is real important too.
Okay. One thing that I'd sort of like to talk about a little bit is fraternities, Greek system. There was, I lived in a residence hall before I moved off campus. My brother was Greek. One understanding that I have of the Greek system is that, the university has a policy that says all freshmen must live on campus. However, Greek houses are actually not on campus of the city of Pullman, but they're recognized by the campus. And that's why, for the Greek system, it's so important to maintain this relationship with the university to allow the freshmen to technically live off campus and live in the Greek houses. Losing the freshmen would definitely harm the Greek system. Now, with our new president, Lane Rollins. my understanding, and I don't know if this is true, this is all, you know, through the grapevine type thing, but my understanding is that there's been on his mind the idea of eliminating the Greek system on campus, something that I am not in favor of, and I'm sure a lot of other people are not in favor of, but as ASWSU president and vice president, that kind of issue would lay heavily on you guys to lead the way, saying, no, we are in favor of the Greek system. What, if indeed this is the case, what could you guys do, or what would you guys do about fighting that kind of legislation?
The independent wants to speak first.
Okay, Mr. Mayor, the independent, the GDI, is going to talk first.
The GDI was an unnecessary comment. Thank you, Scooter. Appreciate
hey,
that.
I'm a GDI. I'm sorry.
I've had quite a bit of experience with the Greek system in the last year due to a column that I wrote for the Evergreen that was poorly written and taken out of context. So the Greek system basically replied to me through a welcoming. I mean, I was invited to dinner. I was invited to initiation. People came up and spoke to me one-on-one. And it was a great pleasure for me to actually interact with these people. And the fact of the matter is the Greek system, due to just being the Greek system, is an intricate part of college life. If you talk to a junior or a senior in high school, you ask them about college, you're going to hear about books, classes, tuition, and the Greek system. You cannot remove the Greek system from college life. It cannot be allowed. And part of why the Greek chapters are recognized for freshmen to live in is due to an FOA, the Fraternal Organization Agreement, that they must sign, which is basically a contract with the university saying, these are the safety measures, this is how we're going to make sure that they maintain grades, they remain active in classes and that sort of thing. And it's very important that the Greek chapters are not allowing the freshmen to just do whatever and ignore what they're here for. And that needs to be recognized by President Rollins. The Greek system is very important for the university and needs to be maintained here on campus.
Okay. So how would you, Charles, how would you work with Rollins to save a system that might be shut down?
A big part of it is just speaking with him candidly. He's got to understand that these students are there for a reason. That's the area that they want to be a part of. That's what they want to be active with. And by letting them know that you've got, 3,500 students in the Greek system, it's too large a group of students to be ignored. I mean, that's a good portion of the 17,500 students here, and their voices cannot be eliminated simply because they're part of the Greek system. President Rollins has to recognize that these are students, and their voices count.
Thank you. Mr. Liebert?
Yeah, sure. First off, I think that You have to appreciate the leadership. I mean, leadership is incredibly important in the Greek system. Ryan and I,
We are not Greek, but that's something that we independently chose. We thought that we had more leadership opportunities in the residence halls where we were living and in just kind of unique situations. But that's not how most leaders, I think, on campus really go for. You know, you come here and you're in the residence halls, and you either stay in the residence halls or you move off campus or you go Greek. And if you most people who are you know, looking for leadership and everything, the majority of them, you know, the Greek system is certainly a very large option. I mean, the leadership in the Greek system is very, very superior. And I think that that's something that, one, needs to be protected, because all of us are very obviously for leadership and strong leadership. That's something that Washington State University is very good at offering. And so I think that's one thing that needs to be protected, and talking with President Rawlings and letting him know that. The other thing, too, that I would just point out to President Rawlings is alumni support and alumni dollars. And if, you know, you want to remove the Greek system, then you better be prepared to lose millions and millions and millions of dollars. I don't want to see a university that doesn't have a Greek system here. I don't think that would be a benefit at all. I think that the reasons why he wants to remove them are kind of blown out of proportion. I think that there may be some biases and everything there. I think that sometimes things will go wrong on campus, an event will happen or something like that, and the Greek system will be blamed for that. And I don't think that that's right at all. I think that there's a little bit of, you know, a media play going on in there, a lot of stereotypes. And I think that there's sometimes, you know, a lot of animosity between the Greek system and the administration. And I think that some of the ways of solving that, one, are better communication. Two, really showing, you know, what the Greek system has to offer and what they are doing, what they're doing as long as philanthropies, and what they're doing as far as you know, social events, and what they're doing as far as, like, you know, the groups and committees that they're involved in. Panhellenic and the IFC, Interfraternity Council, do a really good job of this. And I think that, you know, we need to continue that. We need to really open the doors for communication and keep the lines of communication open between all parties. Removing the Greek system or slowly getting rid of them, that's just not an option. And that's not what the students want. And that's what we're here for, is to represent the students.
Okay, Mr. Cook.
Yeah, excuse me. I've never actually really heard that. Obviously we have our issues. I live in a Greek chapter in Phi Kappa Theta, and what I think is important to realize is that, you know, it's not about money, and it's not even so much about leadership. It's really about where you're comfortable living. I mean, I lived in Stevenson East for a semester, and I enjoyed it, but I wasn't really connected with the university like I thought I could be. I didn't choose to go Greek right away because I was kind of uncomfortable and unfamiliar with what the Greek system was all about. You hear a lot of different things before you ever get to college about a Greek system, and it can be intimidating or it can scare you, whatever. And after I got here, I was actually introduced by a girlfriend at the time, and she introduced me to some guys, and I got to hang out with them. And I really believe that some people are really comfortable in the residence halls, and some people are really comfortable living kind of in a smaller, more individual setting through apartments and off campus living, and some people need kind of a larger community and stuff like that within the Greek system. And I just have really, really enjoyed my experience. I absolutely love the Greek system. I wouldn't be here without it. And I know there are a lot of students on this campus who feel that same way. And whether you're a residence hall student or Greek or off campus, it really comes down to what you're comfortable with and what you like and what works for you. And to not have a Greek system is absolutely ridiculous. So that's, yeah, wow.
Okay, Mr. Dickinson.
Yeah, you mentioned deferred recruitment, and that's just not an option. I think what people need to realize is that fraternities and sororities, they're independent of the university, and they're their own corporation. They are their own entity, and sorry, yeah. In being their own entity, it's really important that we respect that, and we respect where they're coming from and who they are. And deferred recruitment just wouldn't be an option for the fraternities here on campus, because they rely on the new freshmen coming in so that their seniors can move out. And I think that by respecting that and by just working together and creating more dialogue and making sure that their needs are being met by the administration, that the residence hall students' needs are being met, that's how we get things accomplished.
Yeah, in the grand scheme of things, 4 years at college really is not that that much time. And to make sure that you get your new freshmen involved with the house and plugged into what's going on is really, really important. It's necessary that they're involved in all the activities. It's necessary that they live in the houses, and deferred recruitment is definitely not an option. And I think that IFC, Panhellenic, and along with the Greek Alliance and the Greek Senate and stuff like that have worked very well with the administration, and we've really come up with some great alternatives to having deferred recruitment and things like that. So, yeah. Anything else, Scott?
No, that's great, Connor.
All right, well,
thank you.
Anyone else?
Okay. To go along with that, if as an ASWSU president or vice president or a member of the Senate, as you guys currently are, actually all four of you guys are senators right now, correct? Mm-hmm. Okay. Right now, Mr. Chanel and Mr. Gamble's not in the studio, so we just have the four senators with us. Were any of you guys here in 98?
What part of 98?
May?
Oh, no, I wasn't here. I came in right after that, actually.
Okay. Oh. Mayor, were you around?
No, I was...
He's going to come across the room there.
I actually was finishing up my second tour in the Army and working to getting back here at WSU to finish my education in 98.
Okay. Mr. Dickinson or Cook, were you guys around or are you too young?
I'm talking about the beer riot, are we?
I think I know. I might know what you're targeting to go off to there.
Well, yeah, I'm going in that direction. I'm just sort of curious, as a student leader, how would you have handled a situation like that? And should one ever happen like that again?
I think that's a really good question. I think one thing, it's not something that can be handled in just one term. First of all, obviously this is something that lasted a few years, but I think that a fast response is most important. I really take kind of a communications education standpoint on this, that like in public relations and everything, if something happens that is potentially damaging itself, you need to react to it immediately. You need to get out there. A good example would be like Annie Brown this year after September 11th. She had a few emergency meetings with senators and students and everything, and I was talking with her, and we were sad for about an hour and a half, and then we were sitting at a table, and even though we were grieving and everything, we were going, okay, what's the effect on the students, and what are we going to do about this? And Annie was somebody who, she immediately went up to her office, and 3 hours later she had 3.5-foot by 8-foot posters up talking about respecting other people and trying to prevent crimes and everything against other students on campus. That's getting a little bit off the issue, but I think that's a good example of something that's preventative and reacting to it quickly. I think immediately, you need to have, if there's a situation like that, you need to make sure that people are safe. Safety, I think, is a prime factor. You need to make sure that the situation is resolved, whatever the issue is, and then you can work out the rest of it. Then you can figure out what really happened. I would have liked to seen a lot more analysis into what really happened. I think that what happened was the university was like, whoa, and shocked that this went on, and the media came in and was like, all right, well, if you aren't going to come up with what went on and you aren't going to do it, we certainly are. And I think they really picked up with that, and I think that we need to look a lot more into immediately trying to figure out what's going on and immediately trying to resolve those issues instead of having the media really take it and spin it out of control, because that's what really hurt the university. So that's what I would do.
Mr. Cook.
This is kind of an issue that relates to one of our platform ideas. And it really kind of boils down to community. It's how comfortable is everybody with the police officers that are on duty. It's how comfortable are people with their student leaders. How well do they respond to those leaders? How well do they respond to each other and things like that? And I think that one idea that Scott and I have is to bring the Senate out to the students, to different communities, to be accessible. to be visible to all the students, so that the students know that we're there for them, that we're working for them, and they know who we are and they know what we're doing. And I think it's just really important to get more in touch with that student voice one-on-one, because then you really serve the true needs of the students. And I think that in a situation such as that, by doing that, we're going to be in a much better position to be able to walk up into a situation like that and make it, keep it from getting out of hand like that did. That's one important.
Okay, Mr. Mayor, we'll have something to say.
Needless to say, when I heard about what happened, I was pretty surprised. I was like, well, you know, how could that happen? This is Pullman. It's WSU. So, yeah, I think it surprised me probably more than a lot of people. Unfortunately, the situation is difficult to remedy due to the fact that a lot of what happened was due to a mob mentality, which is difficult to fight. I mean, you hear about soccer riots and stuff like that happening in Europe, and it's all due to a mob mentality, which is nearly impossible to fight. I think the university handled it well, especially the Pullman Police Department. They set up beat officers that wander around the university, let themselves be known, they talk to people, and a lot of the Greek chapters I know were real comfortable with Crew Halleck since his promotion. He's been taken off of that beat, but you know, being available has helped the chapters be more comfortable with the police department, and I believe it's helped keep incidents like that from happening again. Russell brought up the results of the September 11th, and I don't think it's really a tangent. Preventing attacks on other students is paramount. Being lawless is unacceptable. I mean, we've got laws in this country for a reason. It's to keep everybody safe, and we need to promote that safety regardless of who you are or what you're doing.
Thank you. I'd like to give Mr. Dickinson a chance to talk if you wanted to on that one. I
don't, but I do have something I do want to bring up.
Okay.
Today is the six-month anniversary of September 11th,
right.
And I was just struck by how fast that has gone by. The past 6 months has just flown by, and I was just reflecting on the unity that our campus saw. I know that when I leave Washington State and I look back on my experiences here, one of the most striking memories that will always stay with me is walking into the Cub that morning and just seeing hundreds of people in front of the large screen TV with people with tears going down their eyes, and again, how the reaction of the student leadership here on campus, along with who at that point had only been on campus for a couple of months, Vice President of Student Affairs, Charlene Yeager, how she reacted so positively to what was going on, as positive as you can in the face of such horror. That just struck me, and I don't know. I think that today is a lot of reflection in where our country has gone over the past 6 months, where the world's gone, how everything is different. I don't know. That was just something that came to my mind after Russell brought that up. So,
right. Yeah. I appreciate that. That Peter and I actually talked about that this morning after a show last night on CBS. It was a 2-hour long documentary of what happened on cameramen who were there. On the scene.
How was that? Was it a good?
It was great. It was raw. I mean, there was no bleeping out of the true emotions of the firefighters that were happening. You had a chance to feel the fact of you know, the near death experiences that these people had. I mean, running away from the scene as buildings were collapsing and having rubble the size of golf balls dropping in on you as you're trying to hide under a car, hoping that, you know, you don't get killed. It was very emotional. But we are pretty much out of time. The lady after us is going to be a few minutes late, so she said we could go over a little bit. And because of that, I'd like to give everybody an opportunity to wrap up your candidacy, talk about why you are the best candidate or why you're the best ticket, why people should go out tomorrow and Wednesday and vote for you. And I'd like to, before we do that, I'd like to thank all you guys for getting up so early in the morning and coming in here and having some fun and having some serious debate and talk about this. And once everybody's had their opportunity to speak, we'll go ahead and go into some songs and be done.
Well, thanks for having us. We really appreciate letting us come, and this was great coming in this week.
Thank you. So go ahead and let's just go ahead and start and go around the room and let everybody give their candidacy.
Great. I think that Connor and I, we have the best well-rounded ticket here in the ASWC elections this year. We're going to be voting tomorrow and on Wednesday morning, and I think that it's really important that people get out there and vote and they elect leaders who have the experience of representing all of the students, who have the ideas and how they want to implement those ideas so that we're just not being given facts that aren't going to really relate with our community, with the many voices and involvement. I think Connor and I have strong plans to make sure that we're out there more through Tuesday talks, that the Senate is being more accountable and is getting to speak with more students through the Community Senate Wednesdays. And here you go, Connor.
All right, thanks, Scott. We have both lived in the residence halls. I live in a Greek chapter. He lives off campus. So we've experienced all three major communities on campus, living communities, that is. And we've also, between the two of us, we've represented off-campus students twice over and the rest of campus all year. I think that that's really important, is to know how to represent all of the students. In addition to that, Scott touched a little bit on our bringing together of the communities on campus, and I think that really serves a lot deeper purpose than just what it sounds. What it does is it plugs people into campus. It engages students into what's going on. It also makes us stronger as a voice for when we're fighting for things like tuition increases and transit issues. So I think that is very, very important. And Scott and I are very devoted to doing that. We also want to make sure that we're not creating new positions, that we're taking on responsibility for the students because they elected us to do that work. And Scott and I are really devoted to doing that, and we've talked a lot about it. And we're going to streamline our exec staff and kind of simplify it a bit and actually do more of the work ourselves. And that's what's really important as well. But besides that, that's pretty much it.
Yeah. Vote Dickinson Cook tomorrow and Wednesday.
Vote Dickinson Cook tomorrow and Wednesday.
Mr. Chanel and myself are all about trying to increase the amount and the quality of programming here on campus, and we want to do that by returning the executive salary to ASWSU and the committees for use in funding their programming, for use in funding their recruitment programs, cash, FIBES, shaping, and all the other ones. We've got 25 years of combined experience both inside and outside of ASWSU to draw on, and we'd like to increase some of the communication with the administration that doesn't seem to take the students' voices as seriously as they should. I'm going to keep it short because Russell needs to speak and our replacement's here. But tomorrow, everybody needs to vote. If we've learned nothing else from Florida, we've learned that every vote counts. Even if you're not voting for us, by all means, get out there and vote.
For Dickinson Cook.
Oh, come on. Liebert Gamble. Leadership through experience is Ryan and mine's main stance. Because we've had so much experience here at WSU, Ryan's been involved for 6 years here at WSU, and I've been involved here for 4 years. And we think that that's really key. I'm a two-term ASWSU senator. Ryan's been the ASWSU senator as well. And we've both been involved in a variety of programs, committees, events, and things that are going on around campus all of the time that we've been here. We think that that is our best asset. And so leadership through experience goes into all parts of our ability to lead and be the president and vice president. Recap of our main issues, the things that we're fighting for are tuition, parking services, Pullman Transit, communication, safety, and diversity. And we strongly believe in resolving all of these and trying to work our hardest to do the best to serve the students in that capacity. Also, we believe in having a task.